They are freaked out.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, December 3rd, 2023. This is your award-winning Gibbon Nation Media Assassination episode 1613.
This is No Agenda.
Watching the real WEFN, broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where everybody's saying the same thing. Go Niners! I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Nobody's saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody cares about
football. That's all they
football.
Say.
Nobody's watching football anymore.
Love.
No.
So here's the question for you.
Oh, and ask Adam or just a regular old question?
No, I'm just asking a random question.
All right.
So I'm listening to all these different shows, and I heard this on The Rising, and I heard on different networks.
Oh, no.
And it goes on and on about the death of Sandra Day O'Connor and Henry Kissinger, the two of them. And she's the best.
Yeah.
And Henry Kissinger was a
famous
famous guy, but he's the worst. He killed millions and he's a war criminal.
Yes.
When was this? When did he kill millions? When did he kill anybody?
Why is he
a war criminal? What did he specifically do? Do you know? Because I tried looking it up.
I do. He died while being Jewish. At the wrong moment. This is the wrong moment. This is what happened.
Oh, that could be it.
We need, you know, Elon's kind of getting away with it. You know, he's like, he's making problems for everybody. It's like, we need another Jew to blame. There's no better Jew to blame than the dead Jew who can't defend himself. Come on. It's obvious. Anything to keep the Genocide Joe stuff out of the way. Anything. And they're going after everybody. This was hilarious. This is Hillary Clinton. I don't even know where she's walking. And there's protesters. Yep, there they are, the Palestinian flags. Hillary, you can't hide. You're supporting genocide.
What did Hillary do?
Existed. Just existed. Existed. I mean,
she's not even Jewish that I know of.
No, but she's support. Listen, this is so off the hook. This is exactly the counterbalance we needed in the world to have, you know, the people who have been abused by the elites, namely children, for the longest time to turn on them. And they don't know what to do. And now, this is so beautiful. Turkish radio and television, you know, they get on the TikTok and they got these, you know, cute young women who are, you know, even on the Turkish radio television homepage, these videos are filmed in portrait mode because they're intended for TikTok. But so they don't even go on television, but they try and get them to go viral. And this is the kind of what you thought. Elon Musk had a problem? No.
How are famous global brands involved in Israel's war on Palestine's Gaza? These brands directly helps the Israeli economy. And the Israel economy is the fuel that feeds its military and allows it to bomb Gaza and carry out a genocide against the Palestinian people.
So the idea is these brands, because they do business in or with Israel, they are fueling the genocide.
The world's leading brands reach nearly every household around the globe. It is difficult to find a home in which at least one of these brands is not present. In 2022 alone, these three companies earned more than $200 billion. Procter & Gamble has been part of the Israeli market since 2001.
Procter & Gamble is almost...
What?
Yeah. Oh, they've been part of the... Procter & Gamble is a, what we call an FMCG, fast-moving consumer goods company. Yeah, paper towels, soap. Oh, no, they're fueling the genocide now.
They had gained attention with a significant multi-million dollar investments in Israeli medical companies and research centers. This brand is so popular in Israel that it is found in 98% of Israeli households. Famous luxury brand Louis Vuitton. They invested millions of dollars in Israeli diamond production companies, which are the cornerstone of the Israeli economy.
I didn't know that diamond production was the cornerstone of the Israeli economy. Did you know that?
Well, I think we did a thing on this recently.
Russia. Anyway.
They are linked to the sale of Israeli Ahava products that are produced in the occupied Palestinian territories. The owner of Louis Vuitton is known for having made significant investments in Israeli security companies amounting to hundreds of millions of dollars.
Louis Vuitton, Louis, you're a problem.
Next up is HP. According to the BDS movement, in addition to supplying technology to the Israeli army and police.
HP. Microsoft is next. I'm telling you. Anything. If you do business with Israel, you're going to be boycotted. Or at you least know, you're going to be called out.
I'm going to give a slightly different angle on this.
Okay.
Because there's something suspicious about the way this is being done. And the end result is what I saw today. I was watching a little previews of some of the football, and they went cut to a Bud Light commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bud Light commercial was a bar full of dudes headed with Peyton Manning, the old-time spokesperson for ex-football players, Emmett Smith, and some other hot shots. They have to pay these guys a fortune. He goes to the bar, orders Bud Light, and he says, I'll tell you what, let's have Bud Light for the whole bar. So they buy the bar, and Peyton Manning's throwing passes of the can with the can,
cans.
The, which cans you can do with. And so he's throwing it, and it's a Bud Light. They had to pay this guy a boatload of money to do this. And this, all of this is going to result in heavy advertising to make up for the bad press. This seems almost like it's orchestrated by the media itself to extract more money from these poor companies in advertising.
Interesting. Yeah, it's what's the UFC, the Dana White's outfit?
Yeah.
They also have a huge, like, $100 million deal or something with Bud Light.
It's costing nothing but money to get back on track, and that's going to be the same Procter, going after Procter and Gamble. I mean, who's really behind this? This means they're going to have to advertise more than before.
That's a good point.
That's a bonanza.
Okay, I'll take your point. I mean, they're certainly jumping on it. But Hillary Clinton can't advertise.
You
got to
do something. If your brand has been besmirched,
what can you do
about it? You can go to the editors and say, hey, you guys have hurt our feelings. You know, we didn't do anything wrong. We just do the stories the way they go. Here, why don't you talk to this guy, head of the advertising
with the brown
department.
Shoes. This guy has brown shoes. Talk to him for a moment. He'll take care of you. I take that as a good point. I take that as a fair point. Fair point. Well, I would like to start today because it dawned on me after hearing Prince Charles speak at COP28, and I know you got a couple of clips as well. I'm going to lead you into them. That all this, the World Economic Forum, they're going to do the Great Reset. That is bull crap. These guys, they're I don't know if they'll do it with COP28 or if it's going to be COP29, but they are coming for you. They are coming for your money. They're coming with a global carbon tax. They're changing the quote unquote global financial system. They're pricing carbon. They're all in. They're getting closer. And it kind of hit me when I heard this is something you won't hear at World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab, give me a break. No, when you address this audience like this.
Your Highness, Secretary General, Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, Presidents, Prime Ministers, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen.
Rattle your jewels, please.
I would like to extend.
Wow, that's a great clip.
I mean, these are the people who make stuff happen. They make things happen. Not those.
I call you Your Royal Highness from now on.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Ministers, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to extend my heartfelt gratitude to His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan.
This is not, you know, the Saudis weren't royal until the 70s. You know, they were Bedouin sheep farmers. And now, Your Highness, Your Royalty, thank you so much.
For his warm invitation to speak to you at the opening of COP28. 8 years ago, I was most touched to be asked to speak at the opening of COP21 in Paris.
I was so touched.
Which, of course, culminated in the Paris Agreement. a landmark moment of hope and optimism when nations put differences to one side for the common good. I pray with all my heart that COP28 will be another critical turning point towards genuine transformational action, at a time when already, as scientists have been warning for so long, we are seeing alarming tipping points being reached.
More than tipping points, plural.
Yes, alarming.
Now, by the way, isn't, he says 8 years ago, but isn't it 7 years ago when it's COP21, you have COP21, then 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 7 years ago. It's not 8 years ago.
Well, that's Mironoka. Who cares? Who cares?
I do.
Let's get to the money.
Because if they can't do the math of just going back 8 years or 7 years, how can they tell us what's going to happen with the climate 100 years from now?
Well, he does this. You're right. You're correct. $4 trillion, $5 trillion, yeah, small difference.
Public finance alone will never be sufficient.
No!
But with the private sector firmly at the table.
The companies and the public.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is coming. This is coming.
Firmly at the table.
It hasn't come yet.
Huh? What?
I say, yeah, it might be coming, but it hasn't come yet, and we can still fight it.
And a better, fairer international financial system,
sure,
combined with the innovative use of risk reduction tools like first loss risk guarantees.
Stop!
What is he talking about?
I looked it up.
I bet you did.
With tools like...
Tools like first loss risk guarantees.
First loss risk guarantees. This is a type of insurance. First loss policy is a type of property insurance policy that provides only partial insurance. In the event of a claim, the policyholder agrees to accept an amount less than the full value of damage, destroyed, or stolen property.
And what's the benefit in that?
In return, the insurer agrees not to penalize the policyholder for underinsuring their goods or property. So I'm not exactly sure.
Wait a minute.
I'm not exactly sure, but there's something about, and we have enough boots on the ground people who can explain to me how they're using this insurance, clear insurance scam. I just don't know how it works yet, but they're going to use this somehow to soak everybody. For him to say this, something's up.
I agree. You don't bring something like this in out of the blue to a conference like this and state it as some sort of tool.
Oh, yeah.
We could mobilize the trillions of dollars we need.
How many?
In the order of $4.5 to $5 trillion a year to drive the transformation.
A year. $4.5 to $5 trillion. Isn't that
the GDP of the United States?
I think that's where it's, I mean, it's, is that a coincidence?
The entire GDP a year, our entire economy per year, for what?
Well, let's continue to listen.
Secondly, how can we ensure that finance flows to those developments most essential to a sustainable future?
Well, first of all, we set up businesses in Africa and we just wait for the money boat to come in. And then we pretend we're helping the black people in Africa. Duh.
And away from practices that make our world more dangerous.
Yes. Dangerous to me because they will want to kill me if I'm still in the West.
Across every industry in every part of the world.
Oh, yeah.
I have, for instance, been heartened by some of the steps taken by parts of the insurance sector, which plays such a vital role in incentivizing more sustainable approaches and providing an invaluable source of investment to reduce the risks we face.
Okay, I think that they're going to run the money through insurance companies. Insurance companies are just banks. I mean, it's not anything special, right? It's just a bank, and then if they get a claim, that what insurance companies typically do is, I'm not going to pay you. That's the first thing they say. So I think that somehow they are going to run the money through the insurance companies. I'm not quite sure how yet. But the first thing that has to happen was addressed by Queen Ursula, who is not the queen of the dancing scene in this one. She only got a short little bit. on the big stage. And then, oh man, she had her own little side session, which, I mean, the audio, she even said, oh, the audio is no good. I couldn't even clip it. It was so bad. So she was completely marginalized in this, but she came and she said what she's supposed to say.
I wonder what she did wrong that this would happen.
She's a failed politician from Germany. Her job is to do what they tell her to do. And they said, you, Ursula, make sure you focus on the one point and drive it home.
The future of energy will be clean, it will be affordable, and it will be homegrown.
Homegrown fuel!
And finally, on finance, we must meet the 100 billion target this year. Europe consistently delivered. Last year, the European Union contributed close to $30 billion in public climate finance. And of course, the European Union will contribute to the new loss and damage fund.
Loss and damage fund. I'm telling you, John, they're doing something here. It's about insurance. It's this loss and damage. It's first loss policies. Something going
on. As of today, Team Europe is contributing.
Team Europe? Wait a minute. What's this Team Europe all of a sudden?
Is it a soccer game?
I guess.
The new loss and damage fund. As of today, Team Europe is contributing more than $270 million so far.
What?
We must get the fund up.
$4 trillion?
No, this is just this year. This year, Team Europe is behind. They must work harder, Team Europe.
Well, $270 million is nothing.
No, there's nothing. This horrible.
But so far, we must get the fund up and running, and we must do it fast.
So they're doing a fund. This is the first loss policy fund. They're going to do green bonds.
But we all know more is needed. We need to reform the international financial system.
No. Because we need a carbon tax.
We need a strong green bond market.
Green bond market.
And we need more carbon pricing.
There it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow leaders, dear friends, I wish for a successful COP28. Many thanks.
That's right. There you go. We need more carbon pricing. Carbon pricing so we can know exactly how much to tax you if you pollute. Then you will pay a tax, and that somehow we wash that through the insurance companies, and we sit in Africa and we steal it from you. I cannot see any other way. These are the evil people of the world. They have been captured, and we've been so hammered by this incessant climate change that even people with reasonable thought patterns, like, well, you know, it was climate change. I mean, it's just a thing. It's hard for anyone to say, no, this is not true. In Germany, as they're getting ready to fly their private, it's no evidence that it was really flying their private jets, but it's regardless, COP28 starts, the world is boiling, and Munich sees sees 44 inches of snow, which they haven't seen ever. It's record snowfall. The planes can't take
off.
Actually,
I have a clip.
Oh, good. Let's play. Did you get the UK also is completely snowed under now. What do you got?
Yeah, weather. Bavarian blizzard, it's called.
And a Bavarian blizzard has dropped record snow amounts on much of Germany, Austria, the Czech Republic, and Switzerland. The storm knocked out power to thousands and stalled travel across the region, grounding flights, burying highways, and forcing mass transit to close.
Two more clips, then I'm going to lead right into your clips because I've seen the title, so I know more or less what you're going to do. The first thing is we have to play something by the United Nations Secretary General, who is a troll. He might even be wearing a wig, this guy. He's a little troll, and he always cracks me up with his pronunciation of things.
He does it on purpose.
I don't know. No, well, maybe.
It's day two at COP28 in Dubai, and the calls for urgent action continue.
We cannot save a burning planet via fire holes of fossil fuel.
Burning planet!
Wait, you're missing the beauty.
Action continue.
We cannot save a burning planet via fire holes of fossil fuels.
We cannot save a burning planet with a fire hose of fossil fuels. Fossil fools is what it is. You fossil fools.
You fire holes of fossil fuels. We must accelerate a just, equitable transition to renewables.
Renewables.
The science is clear.
The science is clear.
No, it's not.
It's clear. It's clear.
The science is clear. The 1.5 degree limit is only possible if we ultimately stop burning of fossil fuels.
Stop burning the fossil fuels. Stop it. But it's not going to stop at fossil fuels. No, it's going to go to fossil food.
Fossil fuels normally get the most attention at the annual climate summit. But on Friday, there was a breakthrough on another crucial part of tackling climate change, what we eat. More than 130 countries, including the US, EU, Brazil.
You can even hear the bug sound effect in the report. You hear the crickets in the report. This is subliminal. They're giving you cricket sounds because that's what you'll be given to eat.
What we eat. More than 130 countries, including the US, EU, Brazil, and China, have signed an agreement aiming to make food production more sustainable. Uh-huh. It's the first agreement of its kind and could be a very important one. Mm-hmm. The world's food system is responsible for 1/3 of greenhouse gas emissions and 15% of fossil fuel. With huge amounts of food wasted in some countries, as well as overconsumption of industrial produced meat and processed foods.
Uh-huh. No meat.
For many campaigners, small scale farmers in local communities are a key part of the solution.
Key part of the solution. So they've signed some deal. We don't know what it is, but I'm going to guess it's bugs. And then we have our vice president, because if you're going to have Queen Ursula, you might as well bring in Queen Kamala.
Around the world, there are those who seek to slow or stop our progress.
Like podcasters.
Leaders who deny climate science, delay climate action, and spread misinformation.
Podcasters.
Corporations that greenwash climate inaction and lobby for billions of dollars in fossil fuel subsidies.
Uh-huh.
In the face of their resistance, and in the context of this moment, we must do more.
Yeah.
Harris also announced the U.S. is pledging $3 billion to the Green Climate Fund. The international fund is dedicated to supporting climate action in developing countries. And the Biden administration outlined plans today to reduce U.S. methane emissions. The CBC's Susan Ormiston is in Dubai with more on the progress being made.
I'm going to stop it here because I saw that you had methane clips. So when that popped up, and of course, you understand these things, you know a lot about fossil fuels from your time in the government as a horrible government worker, in
an administrative state.
Yeah, deep state. You are. You
I was in a deep state. Hey, what are you going to do?
I got nothing.
So first, let's go back to this nonsense about. And maybe there's something I don't know, but this idea of they always keep using Harris said it in there about oil subsidies.
Yes.
Government what subsidies? What are they? What are these subsidies for the oil industry?
If I recall, there is, and it's not just for oil companies, there is a U.S. production tax benefit.
There's an oil depletion allowance.
What is
that's
that?
That's the big tax break.
What is
that? I buy an oil well.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth $1 million because there's $1 million worth. As I pump the oil out, it becomes slowly worthless.
Mm-hmm.
I get an oil depletion allowance, a tax benefit for that, because now my asset has become worth nothing.
Uh-huh.
After I pumped all the oil and sold all the oil.
So you get to depreciate your $1 million initial investment?
Well, I don't know how the math works, but that's I think what they're always talking about. And of course, if you eliminate that, it's not going to stop anything. It's just going to jack up the price of gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah, which now is $2.75 for regular here in Texas. So we can handle some
$5.50.
Well,
now, by the way, the curious thing about our being $5.50, it's also an oil production state. We produce oil in this state.
The good news is,
and we have most of the refineries in this state.
Wednesday, I'm having dinner with the oil baron, so I'll get a full breakdown of exactly this topic.
Good.
Because he has oil wells, so that'll be easy. Dude, what's your tax benefit? He'll tell me.
Yeah. He'll tell you. And it's probably a pretty good deal. I mean, that's one of the reasons. It was done to encourage people to get this oil out of there.
May I remind you, oil baron, okay? So, yeah, I'll bet it's a pretty good deal.
So let's go to COP28. I think we'll go with first we'll start with the Harris stuff I have. This is Top 28, one, Harris PBS.
At the United Nations COP28 climate conference in Dubai, Vice President Harris pledged $3 billion toward a global fund to help poorer nations adapt to climate change. The United States also committed to doubling energy efficiency and tripling the use of renewable energy by 2030. Harris said the time for action is now.
The urgency of this moment is clear. The clock is no longer just ticking. It is banging.
It's banging.
And we must make up for lost time. And we must treat the climate crisis as the existential threat that it truly is.
Existential.
Who says banging?
Banging. The clock is banging.
Banging. She was very explicit on the banging. Isn't it
just
banging?
Yes, she said banging.
Yeah, why not just say banging? What is that? Banging.
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 It's what she's got. That she has some South Asian accent. Buried in there.
Okay. All right. Banging.
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 Okay, we wrapped that.
That's wrapped. Yeah, she wrapped.
Oh, okay. She's done yakking away. So let's go to COP28 2 methane. Methane, because
I got you.
Officials also announced a major new initiative aimed at getting methane emission to near zero by 2030.
Okay. Now, methane emission, I know one part of methane is burning off your gas wells. Is that talking about that in this case or something else?
It's hard to say what they're talking about. But I think they're talking mostly about refineries leaking.
And cow farts.
Methane. No, they're not talking about the cow. It's mostly belches, it turns out.
Oh, okay.
Because they're ruminants and they belch the methane out of their mouth. The problem with this whole thing, and I'll put this right up front, is that natural gas is methane. They won't say natural gas. They just keep saying methane, methane. So you can't, if you turn your stove on, you're leaking methane all over the place.
That's methane. Got it.
Natural gas is 97% methane. So when this is a roundabout way, this whole methane thing is a roundabout way, and I would say a chicken shit way, of getting rid of gas stoves, gas furnaces, and gas heaters. You know, it's a shame that Boone Pickens isn't still alive, because he was the big promoter of natural gas as an alternative to liquid petroleum products. And he would throw a bunch of money at this nonsense and end it right now, because you can't do what they want to do without getting rid of your gas stoves. Even though they don't want to talk about it. Oh, no, we never said anything about gas stoves. No. We're just trying to stop.
This is very interesting.
It's not about gas.
Interesting. This is a scam. Because
it's a total scam.
If anything, people are very aware of the war on gas stoves.
Then everyone denies it. No, we're not doing that. That's not true.
Yeah, but now they've just done a little switcheroo and they just call it methane, or dare I say methane in the UK.
Yeah, methane.
Methane. But they're lying. They're really saying no more cheap energy, because methane gas, natural gas, is quite affordable. I think it's quite
very
safe.
Affordable.
Am I not? Is it quite safe?
Well, unless it accumulates in a house. Complete it, and then someone lights a match. Safe. It's safe compared to
it's been around for a long time.
Than hydrogen, let's put it that way, for sure.
yes, I agree. All right, so we have to get rid of it. Got it.
So this is exactly what you said. It's a scam, and here we go. And this is the methane series. Now this is COP28 methane one.
At the COP28 summit in Dubai today, 50 oil and gas companies representing about 40% of global production pledged to reduce methane emissions to near zero by 2030. Methane's a byproduct of oil and gas production that can trap 80 times as much heat as carbon dioxide in the short term. The companies, including industry giants like ExxonMobil, Shell, and BP, say they'll achieve this by plugging leaks at their facilities and ending the practice of burning off excess gas with flares. At the same time, the Biden administration announced new rules to enforce major elements of that agreement in this country.
Ah, there it is. There's your war on gas stoves.
Now, couple of things in this clip. He says that 80 methane is 80x in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, 80x CO2.
Yeah.
Well, how come this hasn't been addressed before? Why you were always talking about carbon, and referring to CO2, mm-hmm. which is a parts per million thing in the atmosphere. It's hardly anything.
Right.
But they keep talking about it. But meanwhile, methane, why now?
Does it have very low carbon dioxide emission?
What? I'm sorry?
Does burning natural gas have a low...
It's lower than burning coal. Yeah, that's coal. What T. Boone Pickens was always doing. Mm-hmm. Always talking. Yeah, lower than coal, lower than a lot of stuff.
So it's not a good narrative. And also,
well, this 80x this is raw methane going into the atmosphere.
Right.
And he says that, and the refineries are getting now. The refineries. One thing that's never mentioned is methane is a product they sell as natural gas. They don't want it leaking all over the place. They're giving away product. It's like letting the wine barrel overfill and going down the sewer.
Right.
This is not what they want. So this is in the best interest of the oil refiners to plug any leaks there are. So so they're always for that. So this is not a concession by any means, because they want to do this because they lose money otherwise.
Maybe
so. This is bullcrap, this narrative.
Well, how about this? So maybe they're like, yeah, that's good. Give us some subsidies so we can plug up our leaky stuff.
I believe that's in the background. Some free money. Sure there's something good.
Is there also not an element of F Russia in all of this, since Russia has a lot of natural gas?
I didn't think of that, but that's obviously the case.
Yeah.
And so you have that aspect. And the other thing is, and then the refiners are going to try to stop flaring so much. Natural gas, when it gets into the system and they had to get rid of it, they send it to the flare.
Right.
But when it gets burned in the flare, it gets burned. There's no natural gas coming off that flame.
No.
So that's bull crap. that's just bull crap. Okay.
So they just have to go after. Okay. I gotcha. Okay. It's bull crap.
They have to go after. But again, I think the whole thing is about the stoves. But let's go with methane too.
Earlier, I spoke with Fred Krupp, the president of the Environmental Defense Fund, who was at COP28. Yeah, I asked him, what makes this deal so important?
John, I've been at this for a long time, and in my 30-plus years of doing this work, I don't think we've ever had as good a day for the climate as we had today. First, we had the U.S. EPA announcing the strongest methane rules for the oil and gas sector on the planet. Second, we had 50 companies representing 40% of global oil production pledging to virtually eliminate their methane pollution. And then third, we saw an announcement from the U.S. and China that they've agreed to incorporate methane in the future into their pledges internationally. And methane, John, is 80 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, pound for pound, in those first 20 years. And so reductions now that will happen as a result of these three actions mean that storms will be less ferocious, temperatures will be lower than they would otherwise be over the next 10 years, thanks to the actions that were pledged today.
Storms will be less ferocious, said the weatherman.
Over the next 10 years, because of this one action, which is meaningless, which isn't going to do jack until they get rid of the stoves and heaters. But now, here's the problem they had. Like, the hurricane season just ended. What was the big, massive hurricane on the East Coast that took out, like, half of a state and killed millions? What was the big storm this year?
Yeah, carry on. Well, there was a bad storm on the little piece of Florida, on the Gulf side, interestingly. But it didn't take out millions of people.
It wasn't like the big storms, like Katrina.
No, which was...
But if you recall, when Katrina happened, this was going to be the standard of excellence every year, and it's going to get worse and worse. What was this year's big storm? It was that little storm you're talking about.
But this is the problem. The problem is people don't look at history. They're not taught history. They're told to just listen to me. This is the worst. And it's coming from our so-called leaders. So people go, okay, because people have other things to do, like figure out how to pay the rent.
Now, let's go back to this guy and his commentary. This is right here what he said, this meaningless methane bull crap. which isn't going to do jack, is going to be used as well. We, since we passed this, this is the big deal. We passed it at COP28, and look, the, we didn't have so many hurricanes. It's already starting to clear up a little bit. They need, because the cycle, the weather cycle is based on sunspots, is switching onto the other, is going down the other way, and they've got to come up with some reason.
A quick fix.
And this guy just told you what it was.
So wait. So they need the quick fix so they can then take credit for it.
Yeah.
See, storms are less. Temperatures coming down.
Thanks to us.
We're foam finger number one, everybody. That's right. So we can predict in 10 years that everything will be much calmer. It'll be cold. Well, it'll be cold. It's going to be cold. It's going to get cold.
Yeah,
it's going to get very cold, everybody.
Maybe, hold on.
Maybe that's what King Charles meant by tipping point. Where's the tipping point, people?
Tipping points.
Well, tipping points. And the tipping point is that temperatures are going down. Everything's going down because with the sun cycle, what is it? What cycle is that? I forget. They number them. Every 11 years, they go through the sun cycle. I know it. As a ham operator, you know these things. So that we're going down to the bottom of the cycle. I think we have two more years left, and then it's over. And then we did it. We did it, everybody. We're in Africa now. Send us our trillions.
Meanwhile, send us our trillions so we can make sure we don't backtrack.
Exactly.
Okay, methane's three.
And is this a long-term solution to the problem, or is this a sort of short-term quick fix?
Well, we have to both do methane to reduce temperatures in the short term, and we cannot stop working. In fact, we have to accelerate our work on eliminating carbon dioxide. The oil and gas industry took this one step, but they have to do a lot more than this. We have to move away
from reliance
or dependency on fossil
fuels.
What's
he laughing for?
Let's listen again.
The oil and gas industry took this one step, but they have to do a lot more than this. We have to move away from reliance or dependency on fossil fuels as quickly as we can. But while we're still using them, we have to eliminate this very powerful greenhouse gas, methane.
Okay, so from the National Weather Service, Surface, we are 2 years away from the top of solar cycle 25. The peak will be expected solar maximum July 2025. So there it is. That's the peak of solar cycle 25. So that's why hurry up.
Yeah. Find some panicky thing we can do.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. This is the last of these clips.
This agreement is voluntary. The oil companies have to do what they promise to do. And a lot of environmental groups don't like that. They say there's no accountability mechanism or guarantee the companies will follow through. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's good to be skeptical of pledges at the COP. A lot of pledges that have been made at this conference of the parties year after year aren't delivered on. In this particular pledge, we structured it to have accountability built in. So the oil and gas companies are agreeing to report their emissions by monitoring them and then sending them to an international independent third party. In addition to that, the Bloomberg Philanthropies today announced a major $25 million gift to not only the Environmental Defense Fund, but it will stand up an accountability partnership that will make data transparent. And so we'll be able to see exactly who is meeting this pledge and who's not.
So I've heard it four times now. The Environmental Defense Fund.
Yeah, that's this guy. He's the head of it.
But is that a global thing?
I think it's American.
Seems like it's New York.
913C, whatever it is.
Seems like it's New York based.
Might be.
Founded in 1967. So yeah, that's good.
If I'm not mistaken, the Environmental Defense Fund was founded during the heyday of anti-pollution, real pollution
DDT
activity.
1967, a group of scientists forms the organization, sets out to ban DDT.
Oh, it was the DDT. That's right. It was a DDT thing. It came out of Rachel Carson's bestseller Silent Spring, which is really about DDT.
Then in 1970, it was efforts to ban whale hunting. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Which was an attack on Japan, as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
Horrible Japanese killing whales. But I got this 1 minute, 22 second clip. I forget where I got this from. And it's a brief history of
I want to comment on the last.
Okay. Clip. Yeah.
So this, I just want to, this is a refinery story, having worked at a refinery in the lab. And I don't think they're evil by any means. I like refiners. I think they're all great, but this is the way reporting goes. We have to do a monthly coliform test of the effluent that comes off of the refinery water supply, and it goes, and you get a sample, and then you do this little test, and it's called coliform, and it's a type of bacteria. It's a bacterial test, and if it shows up, that means you've got contamination in the water that's going into the San Francisco Bay. And it would go like this, which means there's sewage in there. So I don't know how it even gets in there, but it will get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little elaborate test. It's kind of a pain in the ass. It's got nothing to do with the refinery at all, but you have to do this test. So you do the test, and you do this test once a month, I think, as I recall. And you do the test once a month, and you do the test, and it goes, oh, shit, we got coliform. And then you go, well, or somebody says, okay, we'll do the test tomorrow.
Yeah.
It came out okay. Okay, send that one in.
Oh, so you just take whatever's handy.
This is, you take the test that passes.
Nice.
And that's how you do it. And no one's going to convince me that that's not the way it's done everywhere by everybody, because it's like bull crap test to begin with. Because in fact, you take the test every day of the month, and it would be 90 about 25 days of no problem. And then maybe there's a day in there.
So it's kind of like
something happens.
It's kind of like a COVID test.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Environmental Defense Fund, indeed, a 501c3. How much do you think they were given in 2022, according to their Form 990?
$100 million.
How about $385 million? They have $452 million in assets, you know, because they play the stock market, of course. And their mission is to build a vital Earth for everyone by leveraging environment, oceans, health, environment, health, public health, leveraging children. Fine. Here's a brief history of this COP outfit, because it started a long time ago and we're still not dead.
General Boutros Ghali.
The Earth Summit in Rio was the first time that more than 100 heads of state and government gathered together in one room to talk climate. Establishing sustainable development as a basis for international cooperation, at least in theory.
The world is our garden, and together we must cultivate it.
5 years later, the Kyoto Protocol was signed. Developed countries pledged to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by at least 5% compared to 1990 levels. One big problem, the world's biggest emitters, the US, China, and India, were not bound by the text. In 2009, the aim of COP15 in Copenhagen was an international agreement to fight climate change. Although the US and China helped draft a last-minute joint statement, it was not widely adopted. The 2015 edition in France was considered a resounding success. The Paris Agreement was the first treaty to commit the entire international community to the fight against climate change, pledging to maintain the rise in the global average temperature to, quote, well below 2 degrees compared to pre-industrial levels. Signatories also agreed to assess their efforts every 5 years. 8 years on, the UN says much more must be done to meet the goals set in Paris.
So to just wrap this part up, these are the real people who are doing an actual slow global reset. It is really happening. They're going to price carbon. Every action you take as a human being, it'll start with businesses. The businesses, they get some deal. I'm sure this insurance scam somehow works. Someone's going to tell us how that works. Business will get some insurance, payoff. But ultimately, it's going to come from the individual humans. But you travel.
You're going to be charged for your poop.
Yes, how much do you poop? That's right. You're going to be, if you're a big pooper, then sorry, Anderson Pooper is going to be poor in the future. So it's just going to, everything you do, there will be a climate tax. That's why they're pricing carbon. And we only have to look from Texas a little bit up to the north to see that this is in play in Canada. And it was, and they're joking about it. You have Trudeau and Poilievre, the two sides of the political spectrum, laughing about it. Now, what happened here is they were jamming a carbon tax into aid for Ukraine, I believe.
And the, yeah, right.
And the
classic.
And the conservatives went, no, we're not gonna pass this with that thing in there. But it's all just a big joke to them.
Climate denialism of the Conservative Party of Canada is putting future white Christmases at risk. And that's why on this side of the house,
this is my favorite. Dude, they've been writing since 2000 we weren't supposed to have white Christmases, certainly not in the UK. But okay, you are threatening white Christmas.
White Christmas is at risk, and that's why on this side of the house we stand for Christmas.
Yeah, what a clown show. It's a clown show.
Hold on. The Honorable Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, that has to be the angriest and most caustic Christmas message I've ever seen. This is a guy, he hasn't phased out coal despite his theatrics over there, Mr. Speaker. What he's doing is phasing out food because Canadians can't afford it. Now, as he raises carbon taxes on the wonderful farmers that bring it to our table, why won't he axe the tax on farmers so that Canadians can eat, heat, and house themselves? And why doesn't he be a little less like Scrooge and a little more like Santa Claus?
So if we make it another 10 years, I would say sketchy likelihood at best, we will be talking about bug recipes on this very podcast because they're doing it. This is the, while we're all arguing about Klaus Schwab, and although I like, it's funny, the Klaus Schwab songs and everything. It's funny.
I love the Klaus Schwab material.
I mean, it's funny.
But it's very funny.
But it's really the wrong thing. These are the people, and this is huge, the amount of people who are in these COP meetings, and they're living it up. I mean, they're flying around.
Of all places, Dubai, which is a long haul for anyone to go to.
It's a great trip. Pierre flew in special, you know, to do everybody's hair. And look, I know women and hair. Queen Ursula's hair was done. So either she had her personal hairdresser fly with her, or Pierre was there waiting for her.
How about a wig? She's actually bald.
No. This is no wig. I believe may be responsible for a huge, huge loss, you know, theft maybe of money with the Pfizer deals, which she did on her own phone. Of course, you know, we can't show those messages.
There's no records.
I mean, there's no records. These people are stealing from our children's future.
Stealing from our future.
our immediate future. We don't have much future left and they're stealing from it. But meanwhile, let's all feel good by stories like this.
And finally tonight, the new technology that could redefine what it means to go electric. Here's Maggie Vespa.
By the way, nothing funnier than having a reporter work on climate change and electrified cars whose name is Vespa. Are you kidding me now?
Vespa the scooter.
Vespa, really?
Well, electric. Here's Maggie Vespa.
On its list of claims to automotive fame.
Okay, here we go.
Detroit can add America's first electric avenue.
The battery was at 66%. We've been driving a few minutes and now it's at 68%.
Woo! Exactly.
A public road able to wirelessly charge EV batteries as they drive over asphalt.
The technology is under our feet. Like that's it's correct. Under the surface of the road.
Literally.
The secret? Rubber-coated copper coils embedded in the road that correspond with a special receiver under the vehicle. The technology developed by Israel-based Electrion, who touts similar projects in several countries, including Sweden, where NBC's Kelly Kobiea got a look last year.
So we're being charged right now.
We are being charged.
Tell me why this is safe.
This is perfectly safe. This system is only active when you have a validated vehicle with the receiver
validated.
The price tag for the project to ultimately cover 1 mile of road, just under $6 million, according to state officials, who say the costs will plummet as they expand and in the next few years license receivers to the public.
Could you see this actually being used broadly? I can. Yes. We want to get rid of this myth of range anxiety. Not. You want to know that when you get to a location, you're able to charge your vehicle.
Motor City, once again, hoping to lead the charge into America's future.
Oh, lead the charge. Brilliant. Brilliantly written, I tell you. Let's go have a beer. No. $6 million
by the
for
way,
one
the
mile.
The potholes problem in this country.
Here we go.
Eliminates even the closest concept. That concept is not doable. The potholes will eat into the charging grid that's under there. It doesn't electrocute someone. It's ludicrous.
And, you know, the price is obviously, I mean, it's crazy, of course. $6 million for 1 mile. But, and by that, and that's, you know, I'm sure, I'm just going
and
to
plus
guess.
Plus, you have to have a meter on your car because you're not going to give you the electricity for free.
No, and I'm just going to guess that, I don't know, maybe some venture capital company had something to do with this. You know, this is where this is where your green money is going to. And, you know, right on cue with all of this, and I have to give it to him, Elon Musk is a dynamite marketer. He knows what he's doing. I'm going to go cause a ruckus. And then the next day, I'm going to launch my Cybertruck.
After 2 years of delays and production snags, Tesla has finally handed the first Cybertrucks over to customers. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says it has an extra safety feature.
Why'd you make it bulletproof? I'm like, why not? No. Do you want to? How tough is your truck?
Bulletproof, he says. Elon Musk says the cheapest version of Cybertruck will cost just under $61,000. That's more than 50% over the price Musk floated when he announced the vehicle in 2019.
Dude, we were supposed to be able to have our Teslas do taxi service 3 years ago, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he's a great bullshit artist.
Yes, but I mean, he uses the momentum and he comes out with the Cybertruck and the amount of just drooling over this thing. Drooling. I mean,
it's not new. We've seen this truck before, and he bashed it with a hammer, and it made a dent in it.
No, it wasn't a hammer. It was a steel ball, and it broke the window. The so-called unbreakable window. Yeah.
So we know about this truck. It's uglier than sin, and there's a few floating around. People have seen them on the road. They're here and there. They're prototypes, I guess.
Nah.
But, you know, this truck's going nowhere. But, he gets all the publicity he needs, and then they keep following up because they're looking for more stuff about Elon, and boom, you got...
That's beautiful.
Yeah, he's a genius.
Yeah, I have to give him that. Now, there are some transportation things that are very much under attack. And the first one is air travel. Now, we know that there's a shortage of pilots. We understand the issues. Unions keep striking. They want more money, particularly the cabin crew. And I'm not talking about cockpit, but cabin crew. They really don't want you as a human to have a nice time flying around on vacation, doing business. They don't want, it's ugly. It's nasty. You know, you're polluting the world. I mean, they come up with stuff like this.
Sir Richard Branson was in the mood to brag after making history. His 787 flew from London to New York using 100% sustainable aviation. It's a blend of processed cooking oil, animal fat, and corn-based kerosene, using 70% less carbon than normal flights. But Branson admits the fuel is in short supply and it's expensive, so there's a long way to go before this is streamlined.
It costs more.
Never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Of course not. If it costs costs more. And by the way, they have these
significantly more.
It costs a fortune.
And it dirties the engines.
It has to be re-refined, so it's like a pain in the ass, and it stinks when you burn it.
It dirties the engines. There's all kinds of stuff that does not make this a great deal at all. But Richard Branson, another great marketer, because that's really what he is. He's a great marketer. Got to give him that. You know, he doesn't run Virgin. He sold that a decade ago. And then the final one, this has me somewhat concerned, although it runs right into our trans-Maoist agenda, where for years the Federal Aviation Administration has only been hiring, has actually forced airlines to hire minorities, qualified or not. And now we're down to, I think, an actual crisis. I've been hearing a lot about this, and that's the following story.
Tonight, disturbing new allegations and questions about the safety of American air travel.
That was shocking.
According to the New York Times, over the past 2 years, multiple air traffic controllers have been reported for falling asleep on the job. Others allegedly directing traffic under the influence of alcohol and illegal drugs. The Times reports one air traffic controller showed up to work drunk, joking about making big money buzzed. Adding another controller routinely smoked marijuana during breaks, citing dozens of interviews and government documents not reviewed by NBC News. Man. The newspaper describes an overworked staff, at times struggling with mental and physical health. As thousands of controllers retire, 77% of critical ATC facilities are understaffed, according to a recent government report. Shortages coming with serious close calls at U.S. airports also under scrutiny. 23 this year alone. The Air Traffic Controllers Union writing, the article does not portray the professionalism and skill with which air traffic controllers perform their complex and stressful duties every day. But both the union and FAA acknowledge there are staffing issues, something the FAA says it is working to fix with so many lives at stake.
Okay, so I don't know the truth of it, but I hear from a lot of ATC personnel and they say we're pretty stressed. And I would like to say, I don't know if being a pilot gives me any advantage, but if I can go train and pitch in on the weekend, I will. I don't smoke weed anymore. But I think this, if you had a call out and said, hey, you know, we have a shortage, but we'll accept everybody, not just gays, blacks, and women, regardless of their capability and ability, this would not be a problem. Americans like air travel. We are an air travel country. So I'm up for it. But I'm sure many other pilots who have private pilots. Yeah, we'll pitch in. That's the American way. Not this bull crap. It's so tiring. These stories, so tiring.
It's a good story.
Yeah. All right, now there's been a debunking of a debunking of something that was debunked.
Of a debunking of something we didn't even cover because you, in particular, yes, thought it was bullshit to begin with.
Yes, when I saw this video, which is now many of you have probably seen this, the New Zealand database admin whistleblower.
Yeah, that's already a stretch already.
Yes, I looked at the video and I was like, you know, and I now, of course, I clipped a minute of it just so we can talk about it. But initially, I was like, this is not really, you know, the whole thing had Brighteon written all over it. Sorry.
Yeah. I was thinking BitChute.
Right. Well, I was involved with building a project, helped with implementing a vaccine payment system for our providers. It's called a pay per dose system. So it means that every time someone gets vaccinated, they get a payment for it as a provider. And I helped build it. I implemented it. And when I was looking at the data, which is part of my job, I noticed some discrepancies with the dates of death. People dying within a week of being vaccinated.
So what did you notice when you first started to look at this data as you were building it?
Well, as soon as the system went live, we noticed that people were dying almost straight away after being injected. So that sort of prompted my curiosity a bit. And so I dug a little deeper. Uh-huh. I am a scientist by nature. I love science. It's my all-time favorite. I've got a master's degree in science.
So
I have a master's degree in science. Wouldn't that be would it be a master of science? Would you have a master's of science degree?
Yeah, it was.
Why would you say I've got a master's of science degree? You wouldn't get a master's degree in science.
It was.
There's no such thing.
It was.
There's no degree that you said master's of just science.
It was stuff like this that made me go, whatever. We'll see. We'll see what comes of it. Because I don't want to waste anybody's time. We're not the Tim Pool show. Like, whoa! Because first of all, I think we already believe this. We already believe that the vaccine has caused much despair. Yeah. I don't need to see any data per se, but now it's a story. And then so you send me a Substack, Igor's newsletter.
It's pretty good, by the way, generally.
Generally, it's pretty good. And he says, I analyzed the leaked New Zealand whistleblower data and suggest to be wary of it. And he says, bad data, inconsistent story. I don't know this Igor, but I mean, he's... Honestly, I did some research on this guy. I'm like, well, you know, he says he runs his own data. It appears the data looks legit, but there's big pieces missing from it. So you and I are kind of like, well, I think this maybe was just a bullcrap story. But then Jimmy Dore has Steve Kirsch come on his show. Now, Steve Kirsch, actual Masters of Science, I believe,
yeah.
From MIT. He even has an auditorium at MIT named after him. He's done quite well. What did he do? Did he make his money with the optical mouse? Was that his main claim to fame?
You would know. No, I don't think that. I don't remember. He lives around here somewhere. I've contacted and talked to him a couple of times over direct mail. I've got his phone number. He's one of these guilt-ridden guys because he was a big promoter of the vaccine.
InfoSeq, the search engine.
InfoSeq.
InfoSeq. InfoSeq.
That was InfoSeq.
No, the search engine. And then he had Frame Technology, which Adobe bought. So he's been around.
Yeah, he's a really sharp guy.
Okay.
But he seems to be a guy who's living a life of guilt because it seems that he promoted the vaccine and then he discovered it was bull crap. It was bad. And he turned, it became a major, major anti the COVID vaccine guy.
Yes.
Major.
Yeah, he did. All right.
Way beyond what we just deconstruct news stories. We don't take sides.
So this is now Jimmy Dore got him on right away. I thought that was pretty good. My point being that Steve Kirsch, you say he's a sharp guy. There's no doubt about it. He's a sharp guy. So for him to go out on this limb, he clearly believes in what he's saying. And I pulled a couple of clips from it.
Well, I got the data, and I think I was the first person in the world outside of the whistleblower to get the data. So it got uploaded to my I have a Wasabi server.
We need one of those, John. We need a Wasabi server, whatever it is. I want one.
And the data was uploaded. November 9th. And the whistleblower asked me to keep it quiet until November 30th. And on November 30th, I had a speech in the MIT auditorium, the Kirsch Auditorium. It's named after me. And they actually let me speak there because a student group was willing to sponsor my speaking there. But they couldn't find an MIT faculty member who was willing to sponsor me to speak about the truth about the COVID vaccines. But fortunately, a student group invited me. And so I spoke about this huge data dump from New Zealand. And they've confirmed that it is legitimate data from a legitimate source. And that data shows there's no way you can analyze this and come to any other conclusion other than the vaccines have killed massive numbers of people, about 1 in 1,000, which means the vaccines have killed 675,000 people in America and about 13 million people worldwide.
All right. He has my attention and he's going to go into
by the way, on this show months and months and months ago, we had the 1 in 1,000 number.
Oh, yeah. This is not necessarily new.
None of this is new to us.
So this kind of leads me to believe that this data has, so this data has been out for at least a month. People have had it. I'm sure Kirsch wasn't the only guy. Perhaps we have this controversy, dare I say, thrown into the ether so that it can be summarily dismissed by mainstream to say, nah, you know, these guys, nut job, master of science, whatever, Steve Kirsch, oh, anti-vax. Maybe it's just been thrown into this tumbler so that, you know, it can be dismissed as a bunch of nut jobs.
Psy-op.
Thank you.
It's all the records in a particular database in the New Zealand Ministry of Health. So this is 1/3 of all the vaccination records for New Zealand. And so with this data, which includes the death data and the date of birth, we can calculate everything we want to calculate in order to show whether the vaccines are safe and effective. There's only one way to do this calculation, and there's only one result of the calculation, and there's only one way to interpret the results of the calculation. And it shows massive numbers of people killed. Effectively, 13 million people were killed by their governments worldwide. And this data proves it. Now, there are people who are skilled at gaslighting people and trying to convince them that this data shows something other than what it does.
So there he's saying, looks like there could be some PSYOP going on. That's how, you know, the Curry Dvorak Consulting Group analyzes.
We see that. Everything is, yeah.
We do. So then he's going to go into the analysis of the data, because this is not a new analysis that's been done. As you just said, we had this information.
The correct way to analyze this data is to do a time series cohort analysis, which is the most sophisticated analysis that's available for data like this. This is what the epidemiologists use. This is what the UK Office of National Statistics use to prove the vaccines are safe and effective. So it's a known technique. It's generally accepted in the community, and it's the most sophisticated technique. And it was only the UK ONS which used the sophisticated technique. And of course, their data was very flawed. But even then, it still showed the same signal as in the New Zealand data. And we see the same signal in the US Medicare data, which is all gold standard data. So you have the UK, New Zealand, and the United States of America all showing the same result, which is you take these vaccines and your risk of dying the next day is higher than it was the day before. And it keeps going up and up. And up.
So this to me is a very level-headed dissection or analysis of the data, because we were promised safe and effective. We know effective fell by the wayside.
Right away.
The safe side is what's in question. So, you know, the entire reason I believe for this to be so controversial is to make it dismissible by government agencies, because they are hiding it, as witnessed in his third and final clip.
So for dose two, for example, in the United States of America, we have the Medicare data that proves this. In the United States of America, you take dose two, your risk goes up every single day for 365 days in a row. And it goes up at the end of 365 days, it's climbed by 26% over baseline. 26% over baseline. It should be falling by 4%, because this is Medicare data. And the Medicare mortality is about 4% per year. So this data, when you look at these people who have been vaccinated with dose two, and you take them and you look at how they die over time, there should be like 4% of them should die over a period of 12 months. And what we're finding is an accelerated death rate that is about, it's 30% differential from the 4% it's supposed to go down. So there's no doubt about it. There, you can't have the death curve march up in a straight line for 12 months without any fluctuations whatsoever. It is like clockwork. It is the most beautiful graph I have ever seen. And I just got it recently from a whistleblower inside of Health and Human Services, because the CDC doesn't disclose this data. They have the data. The CDC has access to this Medicare data with vaccines and deaths. They refuse to analyze it.
So long live the dude's name, Ben. They're not all as articulate like our boy there in New Zealand, because it didn't come out right and he didn't find the right partner to blow the whistle with. But I like Steve Kirsch. The way he talks about this analysis, I think, sounds good, particularly if you add to it this one-minute clip from the gold standard, Peter McCullough, the man cannot be taken down because of his credentials, who said this just this last week.
Now enter the vaccines. Since 2021, the vaccines have ravaged the population in the world. Worldwide, two-thirds of people took a vaccine. The United States COVID community state study shows 75% of Americans took a vaccine. Thankfully, 25% didn't. I was the only public health and public figure in the United States in writing to question the vaccines before they came out. Man. And I did it as loudly as I could. The COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, 94% of Americans took a messenger RNA vaccine. It is the genetic code for the potentially lethal spike protein part of the virus. It was the worst idea ever to install the genetic code by injection and allow unbridled production of a potentially lethal protein in the human body for an uncontrolled duration of time. Everything we've learned about the vaccine since they come out is horrifying.
So to be clear, I certainly don't think everybody who was vaxxed is going to die. There's no evidence of that. But anecdotally, and you and I just talked about this the other day, and I'm going to go into all of our, I'm going to do that after I get back from Indianapolis. So it'll be next, maybe Thursday show. I am going to take a look at the increase in producers who have in their notes mentioned friends or spouses dying, and the amount of karma, cancer karma requests. You and I anecdotally have seen these go up.
Yeah, tripled.
Yes. Well, you're saying tripled. I'm going to get the actual number. So there's that. But will this ever really be discussed at the level it should be?
No.
Doubtful.
Why would it be? It's an embarrassment.
Steve Kirsch added in a slash today. That's what you do on X, your slash.
Slash?
I call it a slash. It's formerly known as tweet. You slash on X. You can now sue the mRNA COVID vaccine manufacturers for damages, and the FDA is required to take the COVID vaccines off the market. Why? Adulteration, which we talked about. The plasmid bioactive contaminant sequences were not pointed out to the regulatory authorities. It is considered adulteration. He says he got off the phone with his lawyers, and he says that you can sue. And I'm sure that there are already lawsuits in the making.
Yeah, there's plenty.
For what good it'll do? For what good it'll
none.
Do? None. No, probably not.
It's a concerted effort by the media, right at the very top of the pyramid, and the government.
Yes.
Yeah. And the media is still, I can turn on the TV right now and hear somebody tell, oh, get a shot, get a COVID shot, another COVID shot's good for you.
No.
And it never ends.
In fact, what did I read? I read the other day, we had the triple-demic last year. This year, they're talking about, I don't have a clip of it yet. We're waiting for the first one to pop up. Syndemic, S-Y-N, syndemic.
What's that mean?
Well, I guess that's more than three. Syndemic. Let me see if it's popped up anywhere yet.
By the way, I wanted to get back to this. We were talking about the COP thing. Do you know what COP stands for? Don't look it up.
Citizens on Patrol?
Exactly.
Yeah, I knew that. Syndemic. Syndemic's model of health focuses on the biosocial complex, which consists of interacting co-present or sequential diseases and the social environmental factors. Oh, yes, climate change.
That's not going to catch on.
Climate change is killing us. No, I know what it's doing.
It stands for Conference of the Parties.
Oh, interesting.
What does that even mean?
Well, the parties are having a party.
You're in Dubai, believe me, you're going to be partying.
It's
for
a conference
sure.
of partying. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And meanwhile, we have We have a new term finally for this China thing.
Well, there's a health warning out of Ohio this week after a rise in childhood pneumonia cases. Some are calling it white lung syndrome. We're going to get to that in just a second, what exactly that is. I want to talk to Dr. Florin with Lurie Children's Hospital about this. He is in charge of a pediatrician. He's a pediatrician at Lurie Children's Hospital. So it seems like at least around here in our newsroom and all my friends, I feel like everybody's been sick, not just for like a week or two, but they have this sort of lingering cough that seems to last for weeks.
Wait for it. Listen. There's something coming up that I clipped just for you. The whole reason for this clip, you're just going to talk over it and cough. I play these. I'm not playing.
Play.
I only play.
I am these, mom.
I play these clips for you. I'm not playing it for anybody. All my clips are for you.
They have this sort of lingering cough that seems to last for weeks. Is it something out of the ordinary, or is this something that happens sort of every year and we're just sort of overreacting to it this time around?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think
we're. Yeah, no, brother. Yeah, no, it's a great question.
It doesn't get any better than that. Yeah, no, it's a great question.
And we're the only was missing was, yeah, no, it's a great question. Look.
We're reacting to it this time around.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think we're all hypersensitized after what we experienced.
Anyway, so it is interesting that it's Ohio. As we know, Ohio has direct flights from China. So maybe they brought over some white lung syndrome. And that, of course, has led some Republicans to take a well-known step in these types of operations.
A health alert tonight. Both of Florida's U.S. senators urging the White House to stop travel to and from China. Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott are among several Republican lawmakers warning about a mysterious respiratory illness they say is spreading in the Asian country. They sent a letter to President Joe Biden today saying in part that travel should immediately be restricted, quote, until we know more about the dangers posed by this new illness.
Yeah, lock them down, lock them down. Lockdowns come in, lockdowns. And now a clip that is pulled specifically because you know a lot about this.
Dr. Mandy Cohen assured lawmakers yesterday that a new virus is not causing the surge. Listen to this.
We do not believe this is a new or novel pathogen. We believe this is all existing, meaning COVID, flu, RSV.
CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta joins us now. Sanjay, good morning. Always good to have you on. What could be behind this and how concerned should people be?
One thing that appears to be complicating things, especially in China, is also bacterial infections. They seem to be a large part of what's driving this as well. And they have a lot of antibiotic resistance in China. So this is something that we're really keeping an eye on. If you look at deaths associated with antibiotic resistance around the world, it's close to 5 million a year. I mean, people may not realize that big. In China alone, 600,000. So this is also, I think, further complicating things with regard to this uptick. They're likely to get it under control, but they got to keep an eye on this problem. I mean, you know, in China, for example, many antibiotics are sold over the counter. So that just sort of fuels the problem. There's also a lot of antibiotic use in livestock. So there's all these different places we have to sort of curb the use of antibiotics. And I will tell you this, it takes a long time to develop new antibiotics. It can take, you know, 10 to 15 years, which is why there are people around the world right now who are trying to find alternative sources of antibiotics. They're scouring the bottoms of the ocean with ships, and they're looking even within nature to see if something can serve as an antibiotic.
Now, we've discussed this in the history of the show many times, and you know a lot about it.
I do?
Yeah.
I do know one thing, is that the drug companies, these hot shots that are making billions of dollars with vaccines, and the fact that they make more money with that, and they're not liable for anything, have given up on researching antibiotics. They've stopped. Their antibiotics labs have all been closed down. They don't care anymore because they're just after the money. And the government's done nothing to counter this. That's the big thing.
I told you know a lot about it.
I'm just grousing.
Well, meanwhile, sad news for Pfizer. They've had to halt the development of their twice daily weight loss drug. They were trying to hop on the semaglutide train, the GLP-1 drugs. Sad day. They halted it because up to 73% of people in the test experienced nausea, up to 47% reported vomiting and 25% experienced diarrhea. I thought that was the feature of these drugs.
And I thought so too.
I thought that's how it works.
Lose weight that way.
That's how it works.
Vomiting, I mean, you can do it yourself. It's called bulimia. But nobody wants to do that anymore.
Yeah, and we did hear from our psychiatrist. Remember the one who talked who told us about how controlled the psychiatrists are when it comes to telling children after one visit, yep, you're a boy, you got to get on some drugs. Remember this one?
Yeah, right.
So it turns out she just wanted to say, and she wrote a very long piece in here, and she comes from a background, her mom was 400 pounds her entire life. She had she said, this is interesting. Watching her over the years, I learned how to hoard and sneak food, eat it very quickly, because otherwise she would eat it first, which I thought was a funny line. I adopted and created many food games I would play to try and control my cravings and intake. Nothing worked. I was overweight most of my life. She says that she had the food noise in her head. Now, her obesity came from childhood trauma. Basically, she wanted to not be attractive because of some of abuse that she had as a young child. This is very well known. This happens a lot, especially to young girls. But she ends by saying, 34 years old now, at 34 years old, I'm now 43. Everything changed. I sought out Overeaters Anonymous, the sister program to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, they, of course, have a religious part to this. So she's embraced God and spirituality. But along with that came a very strong influence to not eat foods that contained sugar and overprocessed foods. Then she has lost 115 pounds. She actually sent two pictures before and after. And so she is just saying that the food noise is real, but it's coming from sugar addiction and processed foods, which is the real problem, which is the issue that we have. And I saw this in the Netherlands, where we used to go to the butcher, get your beef. We went to the actual baker and we got our bread. The milkman dropped the milk off in the bottles, and everyone biked to school, no matter what weather, you know? And now you go, look, they're getting fat. They're getting obese because they've got processed food. They've got fast foods. We got all kinds of stuff, all bad intake. And it's about to get worse.
Now for business news. TikTok is one of the world's...
Shit, that's not what I wanted. I'm sorry. I forgot to cut it.
To stay competitive with higher-end burgers.
I'm sorry.
I like when you do the big, grandiose lead-in.
I screw it up.
The Wall Street Journal reports that the chain has been working for the past...
This is McDonald's.
7 years on improving its signature hamburgers. After a test run in Australia, these 50 tweaks, which include a brioche bun, fresher patties, and more sauce, well, they'll be unveiled in the United States. Now, why is McDonald's doing this? Well, to stay competitive with higher-end chains that have taken a $2.4 billion chunk out of the United States' $72 billion burger market. Needless to say, the rollout is massive, with tens of thousands of McDonald's workers across the globe. No news yet, though, Will, about when these changes will come to the European McDonald's burger.
So McDonald's is going to make 50 improvements to its hamburger. How about better meat?
Well, how about they've been devolving their burgers. I haven't had one. I do like to do a quarterly report for Horowitz's show, and I on here too, and try to have one of these. I can't. Last time I couldn't even eat it, but I do get the ice cream cone once in a while when it's hot out. So, but when I do that, I go through the normal line, the drive-thru, and I look at the menu.
Yes.
And I got to bring the camera and go get another ice cream cone, because this, you can, what? A quarter pounder's like $11?
Well, there's
it's
that.
Like $10 for a Big Mac. These used to be, when I was a kid, This used to be the 15-cent hamburger place. 15 cents. That 15-cent burger now is almost $3. I mean, what? The inflation doesn't, no. I know how I've got the inflation tables. This is way beyond inflation. And in the same, during the same period, the quality has gone nothing but downhill.
Well, there's a couple of things. One, minimum wage requirements, mainly in California for fast food workers, unionization. It's all been predicted. Well, you know, if you want to do that, then, you know, the price of your burger is going to go up. But I'm very curious to see what they did to improve their burger 50 steps.
Nothing.
That's got to be taste and texture products they're mixing in. Two,
yeah.
Get ready for every morning show in America. Let's try the new burgers. All the native ads are going to start coming in.
It's going to be great.
It'll be dry,
that will be fun.
And but meanwhile, if that's too expensive for you.
This is the best burger I think I've ever had. Here's the line.
Yeah.
I would write this line and put it into the script that somebody has to say this. You know, it'd be Al Roker would be good at this. I think this is the best burger I've ever eaten.
This reminds me of the burgers I had with a kid when I was a kid. That's the line I'd write. It's like gone back to the base. Whatever McDonald's has done, it's magic. They got better cows. And this goes back to the burger I tasted when I was a kid. I'm telling you, it's burger classic. If you can't afford that, we have a solution for you.
Well, macaroni and cheese that has no dairy, newly released today by Chicago-based Kraft Foods.
It's called Not Mac and Cheese, and it was developed with Chicago startup Not Co. Kraft is offering two versions, original and white cheddar. The fake cheese will be made out of fava beans and coconut oil powder. It follows other plant-based products, cheese slices, and mayonnaise released earlier this year.
Looks like mac and cheese, tastes like mac and cheese. Not mac and cheese.
You slaves can get used to mac and cheese. Mac and cheese. Mac and cheese. Macaroni and cheap cheddar melted together. Mac and cheese. Mac and cheese. Mac and cheese.
So it doesn't even have cheap cheddar in it anymore. And we've been on the mac and cheese thing for 14 years, maybe even longer. We have said this would be the future of food. And here we are right again. The future of food. We were wrong on the fact that it would be cheese.
Yeah, it's not even cheese. It's fava beans or some damn thing. It's processed by a refiner.
It's disgusting. It's unbelievable. No, it's believable. It's believable. This is where we are. This is where we're at. This is it.
So I'm going to play three clips that are a different topic.
Okay.
Because this is coming to a head. And the clips are, it says F-E, I think it's George, but it's F-E-O-R-G versus the SEC.
Oh, yes. Yeah. This is a great case. Yeah, and
this case is interesting because it may or may not. I'll tell you what the issue is after we play a few of these clips. Let's play clip one.
The Supreme Court is considering how much authority federal government agencies have. The Biden administration has appealed a lower court decision in favor of hedge fund manager and conservative radio jockey George Darkeese. The SEC fined Darkeese and barred him from the industry after finding he committed securities fraud. The lower court then ruled that Darkeese should have been allowed a jury trial. We turn now to our legal correspondent Arlene Richards to sort out the arguments. Arlene, in layman's terms, what happened here?
Well, to state it simply, the SEC is a government agency, and for years, it has been initiating claims against individuals through its in-house tribunal system rather than going to an outside court. Now, Congress gave them that power under the Securities and Exchange Act. They used the same system in this case, which fined and barred George Darkeese for securities fraud. Now, he appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Sarkeesi's attorney argued that the SEC's powers should be restricted by the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution, which gives individuals the right to a jury trial. At oral argument today, he said that basic securities fraud is a typically common law claim, and therefore this client should have gotten a jury trial in a federal court. So this case is about what is the extent of those Seventh Amendment restrictions in securities fraud cases where the SEC is seeking penalties. In this case, the Fifth Circuit also ruled that the SEC's actions violated Articles 1 and 2 of the Constitution. So the court effectively invalidated three aspects of the SEC's operations.
Yeah, this could change the entire administrative / deep state.
Yeah, but the problem is this case is stepping on the upcoming case about Chevron deference.
Yes, which is better.
And that's the case, which is a killer, because it's about some guy in a fishing boat where he had to hire inspectors and he had to pay the for the inspector, government inspectors, to be on his boat. And it was just a complete, the problem with administrative law, it was always accepted by the, insofar as this.
After your clips, I have a 45-second clip that explains Chevron deference.
Okay. So the point is that the Chevron deference case will be the one that can screw over administrative law because of abuse of power, which is what's happened with that upcoming case. This case is a bad case because it could step in and under some circumstance create a precedent
that would screw the Chevron deference. So this guy is he a shill?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just an accident, but everyone's glommed onto it, knowing the potential for it being destructive insofar as the Chevron deference case is concerned, which everybody's freaked out about. They are freaked out because what that case would do was take away these kangaroo courts and all the rest of it. It has to be all rethought. It's a major, major case. This case here may screw it up. Let's play part two.
So presumably the SEC followed the same proceedings that it usually does to handle suspected fraud. How is this case or the proceedings different from other cases?
Well, the proceeding itself was not different, but I think the issues raised on appeal were different. And of course, the Fifth Circuit's decision was unexpected. Now, the court decided that Congress violated the Seventh Amendment when it gave the SEC the power to initiate administrative proceedings and seek penalties, and that by giving them this power, the SEC has unrestricted authority to choose cases and seek remedies without going to a federal court. And the Fifth Circuit said fraud actions like this case should be handled under federal common law and not by independent agency action.
It seems like the Fifth Circuit unilaterally changed a law or proceeding that has always been used by the SEC. What was the Biden administration's response to the ruling?
Well, the Biden administration is, of course, very concerned about this ruling. Notably, the SEC's five-member commission is appointed by the president with the consent of the Senate. So this ruling undercuts the administration's authority. Their response to this decision is that the SEC has a long-standing practice of filing cases under the Securities and Exchange Act. It uses an administrative proceeding that sends these cases to an administrative law judge, and that judge reviews evidence, holds hearings, and hears arguments. If the defendant doesn't agree with the decision, he has the right to appeal to a court of appeals, which is what happened here. So, in other words, he got due process. They argue that the Fifth Circuit made significant errors in its ruling because Congress does, in fact, have the power to appoint individual matters to agencies, even if they involve common law issues.
Yeah, this is kind of the same thing with the IRS, where the IRS, who have guns, by the way, they've showed up at my office with guns. If you want to appeal a ruling by the IRS, you can, but you got to have like $100,000 to mount a case, which is why most people don't do it. But this guy is a Wall Street guy, so he said, screw it, I'm going for it.
Okay, part three.
They also argue that Congress's power to delegate matters to agencies doesn't depend on whether or not the case is uniquely suited for agency review.
Now, what are some of the concerns expressed by the Supreme Court justices today during oral argument?
Well, I think the biggest concern here is what effect this change would ultimately have. And one of the justices noted that this involves asking the court to change the law. And she expressed concern that it would require changing the powers of all federal agencies. Jarchese's attorney said this could be fixed by giving the people a choice of which tribunal can review the case. But I think many of the justices were concerned that the federal courts would now be burdened with an increase of cases. And actually, some experts have said this decision is particularly troublesome for federal banking regulators who solely rely upon in-house tribunals. Those regulators don't have the option to file claims in federal courts. But the court today, Tiffany, seems to be considering the suggestion that individuals should have an option to choose the tribunal.
So here is a 45-second explainer from last year, November last year, about the Chevron deference case.
Tony asks, off topic, but can you explain Chevron deference and the rule of lenity? Chevron is not a use of force doctrine, so it's not my area of expertise, but just, you know, general legal knowledge. Chevron was the Supreme Court case in which the Supreme Court essentially said that if there's an administrative decision by part of the executive branch, the EPA makes some kind of administrative decision. It's not a statute passed by the legislature, by Congress, signed by the president. It's not a law in that sense. It's not case law. It's not an appellate court ruling. It's just the EPA makes an administrative decision that is treated much as if it were a statute or was case law and is equally binding. The effect is to give the administrative state, the bureaucracy, incredible power and authority that many argue, I would argue, they should not have.
And so that could go back, and then the administrative state would have to adhere to the rules as passed by Congress, and Congress has to be more specific because they
Congress has to do some work.
Yeah, because they just go, yeah, that's good. We'll let the EPA figure it out. We'll let the IRS figure it out. We'll let the SEC figure it out.
The irony of the whole Chevron deference case, which I think is underappreciated, especially in its ironic form, is that it came out of the Reagan administration.
Oh, really?
And it came out because they loosened. Reagan told the EPA, no, you guys are too strict. You've got to pull back these various, you know, these requirements, loosen regulations. Because it was, you know, and so they did. So they loosened regulations and got sued for loosening regulations by dropping the standards. Oh. They got sued by a bunch of environmental groups. It went to the
probably Kennedy.
It went.
Betcha.
I don't know. But it went back to the Supreme Court. They said, look.
Look? Did they say look?
They said, look. Here's what we're going to do. Because they ended up, I think Chevron got involved by being sued because they took advantage of the new looser regulations. And then they got sued by the local environmentalists. And the whole thing went to court, and the Supreme Court said, look, they said, what we have here is a situation where we have all these administrative laws. Whatever they say goes. And so if they want to loosen the law, fine. If they want to tighten it, fine. And that's the way it is. And then that was became the Chevron deference. And so the environmentalists kind of lost the case, but that's where it started. So nobody thought about, well, instead of getting looser and making less regulations, because you just do it on demand. I'm a regulator. These regulations, I'm going to change them all to nothing. You get a bunch of assholes in there doing crazy stuff like making requirements that are unobtainable, which is where we are now. And so now this case is, it's abuse of power. It's a very interesting kind of a switcheroo there, which happens. This is what happens when you try to overdo things.
Since you bring up Reagan, I watched the Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's a three-parter. And it's 3 hours, basically. The first 2.5 hours, you're like, wow, America is great. What a great country. Look at this guy. Look at what he did. Look at how America worked for him. It's just, everything is beautiful. It's like apple pie almost. It's so good. It's so beautiful. And then it gets to the part where Arnold Schwarzenegger runs for re-election as governor of California. And he put the state in debt for $222 billion for solar crap, for yeah, climate change, because he decided to work. Oh, I got hands across the aisle. And he left. I mean, it was, the other states were worse by the time 2008 came around, but it's really disappointing to see how this kind of a good guy got completely captured because he tried to be nice, co-opted. Yes, he tried to be nice, and those exact same climate change rules and regulations that he put into California is what Obama nationalized. It's all in there. Obama went, hey, Arnold was great. Let's do this for all 50 states. And that was painful.
Thanks to his wife, Kennedy.
He was
Maria.
And I think they were divorced by then.
No, I don't think so. I think when he first started with the climate stuff, he was already.
Could be.
That was really near the end when he was as stupid as made.
Well, no, that was 96 is when Joseph was born. I mean, it wasn't
when he got caught. No,
well, you know how
that kid was pretty old by the time they got caught.
He was 14. You know how that went? So, yeah, of course, he was the governor and he was in Sacramento. And so, you know, it's very difficult on a family. And they were going to, they were in therapy together. And then one day he's in therapy and the therapist says, okay, Maria wants to ask you a question. And she says, yeah, is Joseph your son? And he said, well, at that point, I just told the truth. And then boom, it was all over. And it's kind of sad because he's alone now. You know, he's 75, 76.
He's got a small donkey that he lives with.
Yes, the donkey's there. The donkey's in the house.
Yeah.
The donkey's walking around. It's kind of sad. You know, it was not a good ending, but it just shows that, you know, everything was great and then he got co-opted and then just went down the tubes. And I can see, you know, I can see his thinking. We got sun in California. We should turn that into energy. Yeah. Well, it didn't work out that way. I'm going to replay one of the two clips we had from Richard Haass with Morning Joe, which we played a week and a half ago, because there is news on the Ukraine-Russia front that is important to discuss. And there's no clips, so I'm going to replay this.
How long do our allies in Europe, who've all done, I think, together, NATO's done an extraordinary job, how much longer do we continue pushing, I think, what many people in the Pentagon would think is the unrealistic goal of Ukraine driving every last Russian out of their country?
It's exactly the right question, Joe. And what concerns me is when people get disillusioned and increasingly come to the where you and I are, that as desirable as it is, it's simply not feasible. They're going to increasingly say, and we're hearing it in the House, we're hearing it in parts of Europe, why should we keep doing this? We're already stretched. We're trying to support Israel. We're worried about Taiwan. And even if we give everything we need to give or want to give to Ukraine, it still won't lead to success. What I argue, therefore, is the United States needs to have some very direct conversations with Ukraine, with President Zelensky, talk about reducing their emphasis on liberating land, increasingly put all their emphasis on holding on to what they've got in the long run, diplomatically through sanctions. Yes, we can try to see the rest of their territory return. But for right now, let's have 80% of this country saved, 80% of this country rebuilt. I would actually propose a ceasefire as an interim arrangement to expose the Russians for what they are, so we can rebuild support for Ukraine in this country. But we've had two fighting seasons. The idea that one or two or three more years of this is going to result in success, I simply don't see it. Russia's on a war footing. They have access also to arms from North Korea and Iran. So I just think, you know, anytime in foreign policy, anytime in life, there's a big gap between what you're trying to do and your ability to do it. You've either got to increase your means or lower your goals. And I think here, the only realistic option as a tactical measure is to lower our goals.
So we took that as an obvious signal to Morning Joe.
Well, let's make sure to re-mention the fact that this guy Haass, talking to Morning Joe, is the head of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, big cheese. And he goes on Morning Joe. Really? So
yeah. He makes no sense.
He may even be friends with Scarborough and say, hey, bro. Like,
I doubt it.
So now we know that there was an article in The Economist, which we missed. And for it to be in The Economist at all, which is very left-leaning with the new editor who's been there a couple of years, that both the both the military generals or the leaders of the Russian military and the Ukrainian military, both named Valerie, interesting, Valerie, have been talking and they have decided they're going to end this thing. Seymour Hersh wrote about it in a pretty good Substack. Everyone in Europe is talking about this, the peace talks. An American businessman who spent years dealing with high-level Ukrainian diplomatic and military issues in government told me earlier this week. But there are lots of questions between a ceasefire and a settlement. The veteran journalist Anatol Levin wrote this week that the battlefield situation in Ukraine and thus the ceasefire negotiations for peace settlement are becoming more and more necessary for Ukraine. He said that it was exceptionally difficult for the Ukrainian government headed by Volodymyr Zelensky to agree to talks, given its repeated refusal to negotiate with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The driving force behind of those talks has not been Washington or Moscow or Biden or Putin, but instead the two high-ranking generals who run the war, Valery Gerasimov of Russia and Valery Zaluzhny of Ukraine. And on the table is everything that we heard here from Haas, 80%. They'll keep their 80%, the 20% that they have recaptured, which is what it was about in the first place. Interestingly, on the table appears to be the allowance for Ukraine to become a NATO country as long as they do not have any weaponry on the new border, as it is now, and it can be defensive only. And that would be the concession that Putin makes. They keep Crimea, they keep the Donbas region, and NATO can then, or Ukraine can then become a NATO country, which is like, wow, has Putin learned nothing? But okay. But it seems like this is happening. And even in The Economist, First Lady Olena Zelenska told The Economist she does not want President Volodymyr Zelensky to lead another term, and he needs to find something new in life. She doesn't want him to be president anymore. So I think this is probably a handful
at home.
she looks like it. A handful at home. So it looks like this is really happening. It's coming to an end. Now, of course, they have to... I loved the end of Hirsch's Substack. The two generals may continue to talk, and Putin may indeed be interested in a settlement that gives him permanent control of Crimea and the four provinces he has claimed. But Zelensky remains the wild card. The American official said that Zelensky has been told that this is a military-to-military problem to solve, and the talks will go on with or without you if necessary. The American official told me, we can finance his voyage to the Caribbean, which kind of goes in line with those two yachts he supposedly just bought.
Well, he's got yachts. He's also got houses all over the world. That was a documentary on YouTube done by Scott Ritter.
Scott Ritter.
That was very detailed in all the houses that Zelensky's managed to accumulate all over the world. So yeah, they can get him out of there if they want to. There's, I got a weird Ukraine clip that I wanted to play, which is this just off the wall. I was collecting good news clips, and this is from a Shreveport, Louisiana local station, and I guess there's a bunch of, and I think, I don't know how this isn't a violation of the Logan Act, but play this clip.
The war in Ukraine rages on, and today a delegation from the Ukrainian parliament met in downtown Shreveport to inform the public about the state of the war and how crucial economic investments from American businesses are needed to help rebuild that country. Our Madison Edwards spoke with members of the Ukrainian parliament, and he has more on what they discussed. So what was it, Madison?
Well, Jeff, Louisiana and the Ukraine share similar port exports. That's why the members of the parliament are asking the local Shreveport citizen to help their cause and for business leaders in the area to invest in the rebuilding of the nation.
Louisiana is a major trading partner of Ukraine, and the Ukrainian delegation met in downtown Shreveport to discuss strengthening ties between the state and Ukraine through business, energy, agriculture, and humanitarian efforts amid the ongoing conflict. Member of Parliament David Arakamiya says Shreveport and Ukraine share similar business exports.
So the thinking here is that this is Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House's home state. He's their congressman.
This is definitely a way of getting to him.
Influence operation. I mean, what it sounds like is, well, of course, the Biden administration wants no end because then the focus will come back to him and Hunter, which, of course, is what we're going to be wasting our time with for the next year. Thanks, Republicans in Congress. So neither the Biden administration or Zelensky want to give this up. Give me credit, man. So we need a solution so everybody can bow out. And I mean, maybe this is something for the Curry-Dvorak Consulting Group. We need a solution so everybody can save face.
Yeah, a lot of face saving needed here. This report went on for a long time. I didn't clip the whole thing.
I saw the whole thing.
Well, the one point that they kind of made in there is these guys, this group of parliamentarians or parliament members from Ukraine are going to hit like 10 states along the...
This is part of the rebuilding. This is the rebuilding part.
Yeah, they're trying to set the stage, but
Well, I think the win...
It seems pretty screwy, if you ask me.
I think the win would be Ukraine becoming a NATO country. That would be... That's an obvious win for the U.S. White House. All right, we got them. But they're nowhere near being prepared for that. Has Sweden even been approved yet?
No, Sweden's still, I think, still in limbo. Finland has.
Yeah, Finland got their approval. So, I mean, they need something now.
Well, it's possible also the following. Let's say that deal is done where you can join NATO, but joining NATO does have to have a majority, or not a majority, but a unanimous consent with all the NATO members.
Including Russia. No, I'm just kidding.
There are people who actually would
believe that. That's true. I know.
We've seen clips where, I don't know why. Yeah, seen clips.
We've seen it.
So you do a behind-the-scenes deal with Turkey.
Turkey A,
and tell them, hey, nix this, okay? And then you nix it, or even Putin could do that deal. I mean, somebody could do it because Turkey doesn't care at this point. They're the ones screwing up the Sweden.
Appointment. Yeah.
So it's possible that they won't. I mean, we can let him in, but we won't let him in.
Well, we'll let him in. We're all for it. Good to go. U.S., Europe, they all say, okay, it's going to be great. They're going to be NATO. That is the stepping stone towards a full European membership, which they also won't get.
No, they can't. That would be the worst thing that Europe could do.
They don't want another Greece on their hands. So, and then you're right. Then we have Turkey A just be the foil, continuous foil, like nope. But I mean, it's a beautiful thing that it's coming to an end. I'm so happy. We need less war in our lives. We could do with less.
That is a mess. That is just a rubbleization of parts of the country.
Well, they have the rebuilding project all good to go. I mean, that everybody's ready, and I'm sure
there's money to be made.
There's money in the. How about that? How about we give you Russia's money, the $300 billion? That's been on the table for a long time. I'm sure that Russia's written it off. You know, they're trying to screw Russia with the methane bullcrap. So they could still kind of have their anti-Russian stance. I mean, there is something new. And this was so funny. We've been through this so many times with Russia, but okay, here it is one more time.
Gay clubs across Russia have been raided just days after the country ruled the LGBT plus community was extremist. The reports from Moscow followed the highest court in Russia banning what it called the global LGBTQ movement. Human rights groups have slammed the actions.
So this hasn't quite hit in the US yet. I'm expecting it because what happened is 48 hours after the Russian government... And really what they're after is one LGBTQ organization, which is an NGO, who, of course, are weaponizing LGBTQ, just as it's done here in the U.S. They say, hey, you guys are an extremist organization. You're not allowed anymore. This is not new. Russia has gotten rid of all kinds of NGOs because they usually are, you know, agencies. Particularly for the United States, CIA, MI5, MI6, whatever, MI5.
MI6.
So, but this is being twisted to say 48 hours after they outlawed LGBTQ, they invaded all the bars. They raided the bars, which was for, I guess they were looking for some, they were trying to do some big drug bust. But so that might catch storm. They might use that. I mean, that could be a way to refocus the Palestine energy, you know, because something has to happen with that. The Palestine energy is a problem. It's a real problem because they're just losing grip over that. So you know, we need to remind everybody that Trump is a dictator, and the worst scenario imaginable in your life is if Trump is reelected president again.
You say Donald Trump if he is.
I'm sorry. This is Liz Cheney on CBS.
You say Donald Trump. Why does anyone even give her a mic?
for this reason and this reason only.
You say Donald Trump, if he is reelected, it will be the end of the republic. What do you mean?
He's told us what he will do. It's very easy to see the steps that he will take. People who say, well, if he's elected, it's not that dangerous because we have all of these checks and balances, don't fully understand the extent to which the Republicans in Congress today have been co-opted. One of the things that we see happening today is a sort of a sleepwalking into a dictatorship in the United States.
Dictatorship. It's a replay. It's a replay.
Crock of crap. And everyone's lapping it up like there's no tomorrow.
It's Liz Cheney.
And yeah. Liz Cheney's got to be the lowest form of human. So there was a Gavin Newsom. DeSantis debate, which was a complete waste of an hour and a half.
5 million viewers, apparently.
Yeah, well,
that's more than I expected.
Hannity's not a slouch.
Well, Hannity, yeah, true.
So I didn't clip any of it, and I wasn't about to, and it was a lot of talking over each other, but I did get a 15-second clip of Capehart.
Yeah.
Who saw the whole thing, and he had all these things to say about it, and he did this little ditty.
Do you think that Governor Newsom's appearance, though, helped the campaign of President Biden in any way?
I do, because I watched the debate. In every sentence, it was Biden Harris, Biden Harris, Biden Harris, President Harris.
It was promotion. It was a promotion. That's great. Well, here's boots on the ground. What's happening? Chicago, which now is finally building migrant camps in the city, with the huge tents, which should have been up a long time ago because it's 16 degrees in Chicago, and all the migrants who have been partially bused in from Texas, but others have been flown in. And others choose willingly to go to Chicago.
Welcome to Chicago.
Yes. But these tents, which will house, I think, a couple thousand migrants, are in black neighborhoods. We've been following this for a while.
Yeah.
And this has now come to a head where the black Chicagoans are saying, we're voting Republican.
And any Republican candidate in the city of Chicago, now is your time. Because we are done with the Democrat Party. Reverend Johnson, has shown us what they think about the black community all over this country. And so we're standing here today to say, okay, if that's what it is, we win it. We don't have to support the Democratic Party.
Right.
Continue to support people who are not going to support us. And the Democratic Party here in this city, in this state, and in this country is not supporting us. You got the Republicans on one side and the Democrats on the other side. Guess what? They're part of the same bird.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter anymore which party we go with. But I'll tell you this, I'd rather deal with the snake that's outfitting himself of the Republican Party than the snake that's covered up in the Democratic Party.
That's right.
We're not going to continue to stand for this. We're not going to continue to allow our state representatives, our congressmen, our aldermen, and our mayor to let us know that we don't matter.
Yes.
Just like you're going to show us that we're going to matter, we're going to show you. It's going to be a great day in the city of Chicago when the Democratic Convention comes here, and then they found out in March that a lot of black voters took Republican ballots. Deal with that.
That's right. Deal with that. Yeah, that's right. The convention coming in March in Chicago.
Every time they do one in Chicago, it becomes a riotous situation. Yeah. Harkening back to the 68 convention.
It's a cycle.
It must be.
How many years is it? Is it
60
it,
years would be. No, it's 60 years. Really 40. Yes, yeah, 60 years. 60 year cycle. Just like the certain stock market moves. Yeah, so you have 60 years later, you get a. You know, about 60.
It'll be a real bad look if the cops are beating blackheads, I'll tell you that.
Oh, they will. They'll be beating them.
Yeah, but it'll be a bad look.
That was a bad look when they were beating the students in 68, the Democrat
hey,
students.
We need to bring that back. Beat students. We need to bring that back. They're crazy.
Beat them students.
One of our producers was intrigued by our discussion of potential vice presidential picks for President Trump.
Yes, we have picks coming in.
Well, we have he has the odds. He has the odd makers from the sports bet in Australia, which I thought was interesting.
Well, this is interesting.
Okay. So I guess the lowest number is the most likely, right? So it's 1 in 6. That's that is a more likely than 1 in 40, correct?
Yeah, I would
okay.
think.
All right. So in order of appearance, 1 in 6, Kristi Noem from, she's South Dakota?
Yeah, South Dakota governor.
1 in 6.5, Elise Stefanik, which was unknown to me. But
I've heard her name, but I can't think of what she is. I don't know where the Aussies came up with this.
Well, they'll bet on, look.
Yeah, I know, they'll bet on anything.
Because they got nothing better to do in Australia than bet on stuff.
They haven't got guns.
The country's dead. Sorry, Aussies, but you got screwed. She is a Republican congresswoman from New York.
Oh, yeah, I know who she is. She hasn't got a prayer.
Okay. 7 to 1, Vivek Ramaswamy. Then it goes to 1 in 10, Nikki Haley. Then we go 1 in 12, Tim Scott. Tied with Tucker Carlson.
No, brother.
I know, this is where Australia goes off the rails. Then at 1 in 14, Carrie Lake.
Carrie Lake has been, a lot of people are pushing Carrie Lake.
I don't think President Trump wants her to possibly upstage him in certain cases.
Yeah, she's an upstager. Yeah, no doubt about that.
She's an upstager. Yeah, that could be a problem. Then my potential pick, 1 in 21, so those odds are not good, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And then we get into just, you know, like Marsha Blackburn, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Ben Carson, Gregory Abbott. No. Then Marco Rubio. Let's see. Odds at 1 in 41 is Tulsi Gabbard. Bobby the Op at 41. J.D. Vance at 41. So the odds have it at Kristi Noem, at least Stefanik. That's how, you know, she could be. She's definitely made the right moves.
I see Kristi Noem being a good candidate.
Man, the South Dakotans are not happy with her. No, they just haven't been. Craig, who's one of our producers.
Well, she brags a lot about being the greatest governor in South Dakota in the history of the state.
Now, they have all kinds of issues with her. There's lots of stuff she's done that the South Dakotans don't like, particularly the conservatives. I'll have Craig Weinberg, I'll have him write it up. He'll write it up for me. He'll tell me succinctly what it is. But I know, because that's when Megyn Kelly last time I was on, emphasis on last time I was on.
Probably the last time you were on.
Yeah, she's like, Kristi Noem. I said, nah, South Dakotans don't like her. That's not true. Okay, Megyn. <All
right>. your invitation of Kelly is almost spot on. I mean, I can't tell if you're... If she's actually in the studio with you.
I know. It's like we switched over to New York. She's now going into acting.
Who?
Megyn.
Kristi Noem?
No, Megyn Kelly. Yeah. Everyone's... Okay, so Daily Wire are doing movie projects now. That's what that CEO guy...
That's what Boring always wanted to do.
So I guess they're doing a...
I'm reminded of... remember when Yahoo was run by that guy from Hollywood?
Ah, oh, what was his name?
It started with a B, I think. I can't remember. Somebody in the troll room might remember it was, but he was such a Hollywood, and he was going to turn everything into, like, he was going to start using Yahoo money to produce movies.
Yeah, and then they finally...
And he spent all his time in L.A. He never was up here.
Yeah, and then they threw the whole thing to Marissa Meyer and just let it go to crap.
Yeah.
What was the name of, what was that guy's name? He was a real Hollywood guy. Troll Room doesn't know. But anyway, so Daily Wire.
Troll Room doesn't know? That stuns me.
Troll Room's not paying attention. They're trolling. That's what they do. They're too young. They're too young to know this stuff. I mean, we could look it up. I mean, let's see.
Yahoo. Yeah, man, who here cares?
Yeah,
well,
now I got to know. Yahoo. Let's do it.
Consult the Book of Knowledge.
Terry? Wasn't it Terry something?
Terry Semel.
I did that from memory.
Well, good for you.
Thank you very much. Anyway, so the Boring Company, Boring, the CEO of Daily Wire. So he's all on the movie tip. And so they're doing an animated short or a series, which I think that's what Megan's going to be acting in. And of course, what everyone's talking about is Lady Ballers, the movie. You heard about Lady Ballers, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think this is a mistake, to be honest about it. I think it's counterproductive. You know, I like humor.
What's the mistake?
What is their mission? Is their mission just to have?
What you're saying, you're like the guy who owns a little store in the corner and the guy across the street selling junk jewelry. So you sell junk jewelry. And then another guy down the street does knife sharpening. So you do knife sharpening. And pretty soon, the store that you started to sell something or other is now just a store full of different junk processes.
Wow, I hadn't thought of explaining it that way.
Well, that's what it is. Know what you do and do it.
Well, so this
like us all of a sudden. Well, you know, while we're at it, why don't we, you know, do this and that? No.
Well, so they have some big names that they have in this movie. Then it's an anti-woke movie, and you know, it's like it just seems like
doing an anti-woke movie is as bad as doing a woke movie. Tell a good story.
There you go. That's it. What's it's just as bad as doing
get a politics movie. Out of it. I mean, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you're. I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Let's do a good movie. There you go. Yeah,
try making a good, entertaining film that people enjoy.
Just a movie we'll all enjoy watching that everybody can go and watch. Well, I guess that's what Barbie was. Maybe
a lot of people, everybody went and watched it.
Yeah,
it was.
I still haven't seen it. I can't bring myself to watch.
You won't get past. You will not get over 10-20 minutes into it. There's no way.
No, I'm
because it's silly. It's a silly promotional film.
Yes.
It's very pink though. And I will say this: when the Oscars come out, if they don't give set decoration or art director to the person who did that movie, they're screwing up because it is stunning.
So before we take a break, I think we should probably discuss Israel and Hamas.
I have clips.
Yeah, let me kick this off with a Morning Joe clip just to get us into the mood.
A little deeper into the New York Times report that Israel knew Hamas was planning a wide-scale assault a year before the October 7th terrorist attack. 1 year. According to the Times, Israeli officials obtained an approximately 40-page document, which they codenamed as Edzad Jericho Wall. It outlined point by point, exactly the kind of devastating invasion that led to the deaths of about 1,200 people, probably many more. The Times writes, Israeli military and intelligence officials dismissed the plan as aspirational, considering it too difficult for Hamas to carry out.
Well, the problem with that is, and we're going to talk to Jackie about this very
and
soon.
And the reporter behind this piece.
Right, the problem with that is that Israel needs U.S. funding. We need to know what we're funding. Are we funding Benjamin Netanyahu? Are we funding his designs to stay in power? Are we funding an operation where we have to look and guess, okay, well, is this in the best interest of the Israeli people? Or is it this in the best interest of a prime minister who deliberately focused on the West Bank, deliberately turned a blind eye to this plan for a year where it's specifically laid out. So I'm not so sure that Congress and the president want to approve even more money for Israel until we know that there's actually somebody running Israel.
There it is.
That even the Israelis support. The Israelis don't trust Benjamin Netanyahu.
I think this is the way they want to manage this crisis because You can't hate
regime change.
Yes, you can't hate the Jews, but everybody can hate Bibi. That's an easy one. I mean, even our own knights, like, you know, screw Bibi Netanyahu. He's no good. And now it's like, oh, we don't want to be funding him. Yes, regime change, which would make the woke Israeli population very happy.
This is interesting because we already had Richard Haass on the show. So we know there's a conduit between the Council on Foreign Relations and this stupid show. So this is just, this is the talking points from the CFR.
Yep.
We have to assume that.
I think so.
So the talking points, so the CFR wants to get rid of Bibi. For whatever reason. And this bull crap with this report, like, oh, and he kept ignoring it day after day. It's like as though they were shoving it in his face every single day. And he's, nah, get that out of there. He looked at it like a million other reports you get when you're in the job like that. And they come past your desk and, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. There's a different one every day. And they're all doing different things. You choose one or the other. And your guys are supposed to tell you what's important and what's not. And if the head of the chief of intelligence tells you this is going to happen, you take it seriously. But if it's just some rando report that goes through. This is bull crap.
I think they can make him the new Putin. He has the face for it. Let's be honest.
By the way, he's looking like he's getting tired.
He's getting tired of this.
So they're going to oust him in some way, shape, or form.
I think, but also focus the energy not on Israel, but on Bibi Netanyahu. That's a way out of this. They need a way out.
America. Using this phony baloney report as a ruse is a great idea.
Yes, there you go. That's our CIA. Sometimes the whole report
could be bogus for all we know.
Could be bogus.
Everything he said, we don't know any of it to be true. That he kept ignoring the report, blah, blah, blah. We don't know that one thing he said, Scarborough said.
No,
we don't know that any one item is actually true.
No, it's unnecessary. We know that. Russia. Very perfect phone call. Very fine people. Come on. We don't need that. Just repeat stuff.
Very fine people. My favorite.
Just repeat it over. Dave Rubin tried to correct that on, he was on with Bill Maher.
There's always somebody trying to correct it to no avail.
Yeah. And he was on with what's the old coot, the USMC hoodie, pink hoodie wearing guy. He used to be married to Mary Matlin.
That guy.
Yeah, the bald guy, the old kook.
The bald old fart, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, very fine people. And Dave Rubin is like, well, you know, he's and just everyone laughed over him. Dave Rubin could not get the correction in. No, not going to happen. James Carville, thank you.
Carville.
Yeah. No, you can't even understand. I couldn't clip it because you can't understand him.
You can't understand what he's saying.
Pretty much like that. Yeah, you can't understand him anymore. Can't. All right. So what clip do you have? What clips do you have about this?
Well, I got the update the as of yesterday, Gaza. The update on the whole thing. And of course, it's from PBS. And so it will have a certain anti-Jew hate slant, but it's okay. This is the Gaza update.
Hold on.
Elitist voices of America. This is NPR. Or PBS.
Tonight, hopes for another pause in the fighting in Gaza anytime soon have dimmed considerably. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered his negotiators home from Qatar, saying the talks there had hit a dead end. Since fighting resumed, at least 200 Palestinians have been killed, bringing the death toll since October 7th to more than 15,200. Those numbers from the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Meanwhile, the focus of Israel's renewed aerial bombardment of Gaza has shifted from the north.
Yeah! Nat Pops, we got to remind everybody, Nat Pops, that's what you do as a video editor. Good work.
Israel's renewed aerial bombardment of Gaza has shifted from the north.
In the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunus, the streets are engulfed in smoke. The Israeli military has dropped leaflets urging residents of the city and the surrounding area to evacuate further south. But beleaguered Gazans say there is nowhere to go. They seek refuge wherever they can find it, like this makeshift camp outside Al Nasser Hospital.
We fled the north before coming here. We went to various places. There's no safe place in Gaza.
Our houses are gone. Our property is gone. Our money is gone. Some died, some handicapped in the hospital. What is left to cry for? And then they tell us we will get aid. Where is it?
As the wounded fill Al Nasser Hospital, today that aid, 50 trucks full according to the Palestine Red Crescent Society, entered through the Rafah crossing along the Egyptian border, the first relief since the ceasefire ended Friday. Yesterday, Israel had blocked aid from getting into Gaza.
You know what's interesting? That Sir Brian of London is in Israel. He's been giving me, his boots on the ground.
Yeah.
On Friday, he sends me a text message. He says, well, ceasefire is over. Rockets are incoming. But I didn't hear anybody report on that.
I heard one report of rockets incoming.
Oh, you did?
But they ceased before the ceasefire was over. Before it was over, they started launching rockets into Israel.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about these reports, and all of them have the same thing, it's the Palestinian health authorities that has the head count of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
Well, they're the authority. They're the authority.
They're the health authority. They're not the death authority. They're not the government.
Yeah. Well, they're the health. They're the
I
authority.
I find it peculiar that this one non-agency or who knows who they are has got the death count.
It's probably some guy in an apartment in London.
Think of the same thing.
Like the Syrian guy. Forget who that was. Yeah, remember that guy?
Girl, I thought it was a girl.
No. It was the Syrian guy who was the authority, and he was in London. And he did, he's a Syrian
just making
authority.
It up as he goes along. Mm-hmm, so, okay, let's go to part two of this.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the fighting would not stop until Israel meets its objectives.
We will continue the war until we achieve all its goals, and it's impossible to achieve those goals without the ground operation. The ground operation was necessary to bring the results until now, and it is necessary to bring the results moving forward.
With hopes of a renewed ceasefire dissipating, Vice President Kamala Harris spoke with reporters in Dubai, laying out the Biden administration's vision for peace.
Five principles guide our approach for post-conflict Gaza. No forcible displacement, no reoccupation, no siege or blockade, no reduction in territory, and no use of Gaza as a platform for terrorism. We want to see a unified Gaza and West Bank under the Palestinian Authority. And Palestinian voices and aspirations must be at the center of this work.
Wow. Waffling much. Waffling. She's waffling.
Does she have absolutely no emotion whatsoever when she discusses anything? She just breathes like a robot?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sounds about right.
She's an idiot.
Unlike the emotion and the sportscasterish vibe of this CNN report.
Both Israel and Hamas had indicated they were ready to restart fighting if the negotiations fell apart and if the truce expired. And that's exactly what happened right around 7 o'clock this morning. We have seen the skyline of Gaza. We have heard the strikes the IDF is carrying out in Gaza. So this war is very much back on, as both
Israel and Hamas had promised.
We have seen Israel carrying out strikes in southern Gaza. According to authorities there, that is where they said they would focus the second phase of their operation. Meanwhile, Israel has dropped leaflets in parts of southern Gaza. Interestingly, those leaflets have a QR code that brings you to a map with Gaza broken up into very tiny parcels.
QR code.
It seems as if Israel will try to evacuate these parcels of civilians along established evacuation routes in an attempt to avoid civilian casualties as the fighting resumes at pace. Worth noting that Secretary of State Antony Blinken was just here.
Whoa.
He said Israel had to have a concrete plan to protect civilians before they launch the second phase of their operation. Well, that is now here. He also said Israel needed a plan for more humanitarian assistance, and yet aid trucks outside of Gaza that have already been inspected by Israel, according to an eyewitness on the ground there, have not gone in since this morning. So, Phil, it is very much a question of whether that humanitarian aid has now been cut off with the fighting resumed.
Yeah, we know that's not true because yesterday's report showed they came through. Yeah.
Poppy Harlow broke it down for us.
This hospital simply cannot take more children with the wounds of war. There are children everywhere. These children are sleeping. There was a bomb literally 50 meters from here. This is a war on children.
Oh!
A war on children, stark words from a UNICEF war spokesman as the truce between Israel and Hamas has ended. He was speaking from one of the last remaining hospitals that is operating in Gaza. The Hamas-controlled Palestinian Health Ministry says 6,000 children have been killed in Gaza since the October 7th terror attack.
That's all you need to know. It's a war on children. That's it. That's all. It's a war on children. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. In the morning to you, the man who put the C in the war on children. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeForest.
Morning to you, Mr. Ann McCurry. In the morning, all ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and all the knights out there.
Hello, trolls. Are you trolling? We got 2,073 trolls in the troll room.
400 low.
They're eventually just going to have to take this as the new normal. Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right. I mean, I would say by Christmas, we'll be back to doing the executive producers in after the first hour because it'll be very short. I know. Look, I've been around this gig. I know how that goes. I've been around this gig, man. But for now, we're still very happy to report we have 2,073 trolls hanging out with us in the troll room, which you can join them. There's room for 400, apparently. Go to trollroom.io and join in the fun. You can log in right there, listen to noagendastream.com, listen to it live as we come to you live every Thursday and Sunday. And, of course, before our show is the fabulous Darren O'Neill, who celebrated Ozzy Osbourne.
God, he played his songs. They're terrible.
They're not terrible. Ozzy's songs are good.
Please.
Humbug. Come on, man. What do you want, Lawrence Welk? Darren, no, play some Lawrence Welk for John on Thursday.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's the way to go counter-argument is Lawrence Welk. Yeah.
Yeah, well, with Ozzy is classic, man.
He sucks.
Oh, wow. All right. John at Dvorak.org. You can't mess with Oz. That's just not, that's un-American.
Stinks.
You can also be alerted when we go live. When any of the shows go live, actually, if you subscribe to the podcast in a modern podcast app, go to modernpodcastapps.com. I'm using Podcast Guru right now. I like it a lot. It's got a lot of cool features in there. Or you can just join us at noagendasocial.com, where I have not posted a single post since the last show, and I will continue my boycott because it's horrible.
They're all over you about you're a Musk hater.
Yeah. You even told the guy that he should be kicked off.
I did. Well, you are at least paying attention.
I said, of course.
Knock it off. You're making a fool of yourself. Or quit. Quit the platform.
Yeah, and did you see his reply?
No.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that you couldn't deconstruct the media deconstructors or have an opinion or make a joke.
Yeah, the guy's a jerk, this guy. Get rid of him. Take him off.
I'm not doing anything of the kind. I'm watching.
Well, he thinks you're a big a-hole because he thinks I am now too because I defended you.
Thank you, I appreciate that. No, I'm just, this is now a social experiment. I'm just watching it devolve into mush.
Into chaos.
Yes, people are. You know, I used to try and manage it a little bit, tell people try and calm stuff down. I'm not. I'm left to their own devices. Even people who believe they're on the same team of love. Well, just everyone is traumatized, and everyone's yelling and.
I'm reminded of John Conway's "The Game of Life," a very early computer program that came out in probably the late '70s. That was the game. It was it was just for regular old-fashioned screens before graphics came along. Mm-hmm. And these little communities would crop up, and they would show you how they grew and shrunk and grew and shrunk, and they never stabilized. And they all went extinct. And I'm reminded of that when I see what's going on there.
Well, that's what it's always going to be.
Well, it reminds me of the No Agenda forums. That was a thing that was lively, and then it just went extinct because it was They went nuts.
No, what happened with No Agenda Forums is they kept saying, you need to post over here. You need to participate. And I was like, I got no time for that. Well, you don't love us. And I said, no.
Well, there was that. But the real killer for them was they started their own podcast.
The Roundtable.
They counter-programmed the No Agenda
it
show.
It was called The Roundtable, wasn't it?
I think something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it turns
out. So there was just this, this podcast that nobody paid attention to. It was just these.
No, that's not the problem. They tried to do a podcast about our podcast every, you know, twice a week, and it turns out, oh, it's really hard.
Well, actually, that, I think that's more another one. Yo Agenda was more along those lines.
Comic strip blogger, yeah.
Yeah, and his buddy had, there's two guys, and they would all he do was grouse about our show.
Yeah.
And then when the show, that's when the show first started, and then when it got like 2 hours long, and then it got close to 3 hours, they couldn't do it.
They couldn't hack it.
Bailed out.
we smothered them with love. No. What you should do. This is, and I'm a proponent of the Troll Room. I think it's good for people to go to trollroom.io during the show, go in there and go, I hate you. You suck. Blech, because it just, it scrolls off and it goes away. And then, you know, then nothing really happens. It's just, it's good. You get it out of your system. I think it's a really, that is the place to go then. And you also can't post memes. That's another good thing about it. You know, it's just text. So you have to be crafty with words, you know. You have to have some talent. Talent. It's not always. Yeah. Anyway.
Usenet.
Now, what was the email system that you went through the bulletin boards? Remember, you would write an email and then it would upload and it would.
But that wasn't MCI mail. Was the only one.
No. It was through the bulletin board system.
It wasn't CompuServe email.
No. Before that,
and it wasn't the source email.
No, before that, it was.
It wasn't FidoNet.
Yes,
was
FidoNet.
It?
Yes, that's okay. It. Nailed it. FidoNet. Yes, and you'd have to wait a day. I mean, you'd have to wait for the phone lines to be, you know, to open up. The guy would have a bulletin board with five phone lines. You have a demon and keep dialing.
To have a bulletin board back in the day, you had to have X number of phone lines coming in. So you'd have people with 10, 20 phone lines,
yes.
Which was a good thing for the phone companies.
Well, it was all local calls. You had to find a bulletin board with a local number so you could be, because, yeah, long distance, no one could afford it. Especially not at 300 baud or whatever we had.
That was 300 baud.
Remember those days?
And then it quickly went to 1,200. So there you go.
And then we got the Hayes compression protocol.
Yeah, baby. Dennis Hayes.
Remember that? Good times.
Yeah, I do. I remember all that stuff because I had all that gear.
Now I have 5 gigabits per second fiber in my lifetime. Five. Yeah. Okay. Just because you have two networks that don't even get one in total. Please.
I have two networks that both get
you're
one.
You're not getting. You're getting one to the local head end to the ping. You're not getting any.
Well, that's just true with everything.
My bike. So why don't you give me this? Like, you're not getting to. It's not.
Well, you're not.
It's not about the speed. It's about the amount of things I can have simultaneously. I can have my Tors and I can have my Umbral and my Start 9 and we can stream. Yes. Yeah. You see.
Brother.
Why is that funny to you?
It's just funny.
All right. We are a value for value show. We pioneered the concept. Even the Noster guys are now calling themselves value for value.
Yeah, eventually we'll be forgotten.
Well, I think it's already happened. I have a feeling we're way past that point. Yeah, man, Jack Dorsey invented value for value. That's how that went. Man, I saw that coming a long time. Thanks, Jack. At Jack. So we decided long ago that the only way to be able to speak freely is to not have advertising or any corporate interests or anything that is other than just us and the audience, which we never called listeners. We decided to call you producers because that's what you do. You send us clips, you send us articles, boots on the ground, your insights, your knowledge, sometimes even your humor.
By the way, I may or may not read these today, probably in the show coming up. We have at least three people that I got email from, mm-hmm. who work in the facilities at these various water plant facilities.
Yes,
and they have all the insight about this. This is bull crap, and they're using, you know, passwords.
Default passwords.
Default passwords, and anyone can hack in, and there's no reason it's on the net. We have people that do. That's why when you ask for somebody who knew about this insurance scam.
Oh, it'll show up. We'll get it.
It's astonishing, I have to say, at some point. It's astonishing the people that we have that work in every single industry. I was talking to somebody about the show recently, and they asked me, we're talking about, what's your demo, he asked me.
What's our demo? Did you kick him in the shins and poke him in the eye?
I kicked him right in the balls. And so I said, the great thing about our show is we have no demo. Yeah. It's little kids to old men, old women, and everything in between, and engineers and everything, pilots. I mean, there's preachers, everybody. It's astonishing, the demo.
Yeah. Every race, creed, religion, background, everything. Yes, we have a world demo. Just tell them that. Our demo is the world.
Well, that's probably easier on him than kicking him in the balls.
Well, it's too late now. I mean, the guy will never talk to you again.
Pissed off about it.
So the way that works is, if you get any value out of the show, and if you don't, you got to question your life, because you could be hate listening. You could be hate listening.
We do have hate listeners.
Oh, you know.
But not a lot, but we do have them.
Shows that I hate to listen to, but I listen to regularly.
Yeah,
I
mean, you're a hate listener. You go out and find shows you hate.
There's only one show I hate, and I listen to that twice a week. By the way, she's on TV now. She's on a Sunday CNN panel show. I can't wait for the clips. Brother is right. Led by that ex-Fox guy. What's his face?
What ex-Fox? The There's guy, a bunch of them. No, Sanchez?
No, the guy who left Fox, the famous dad. What's his name?
Tucker Carlson.
Other famous. No, the news guy who went, I'm leaving this Fox, you Republicans. I'm a liberal.
Oh, Shepard Smith?
No.
Throwing out as many names as I can.
Chris Wallace.
Oh, Chris Wallace.
That guy. Yeah. He moderates it, and Kara Swisher is one.
He is just a, well, it's dud meets dud.
Dud meets dud. Ooh, I got to write that one down. Dud meets dud. Anyway, back to value for value. So here's an example, although it's a sad example, because Sir Paul Couture created the No Agenda Art Generator for us, noagendaartgenerator.com, and he's maintained that thing for well over a decade. We had one before that, but I mean, that is true value, because
and he changed the structure of it at least midway, once completely.
Yeah, midway. And, you know, there's over...
And just smooth as silk.
Over 25,000, always smooth as so. 25,000 pieces of artwork. This is where the artists compete. This thing went belly up, hardware failure, and he has just been pulling his hair out trying to get it back online. So he has a temporary page up, and we got all kinds of solutions. But the point is, we never would have started that. We would never have been able to afford to pay someone to do that. We would look at the monthly bill and go, eh. I can hear you go, eh, why are we paying for this? And it goes for all kinds of things. We have never had to do any of that. All we have to do is deconstruct media and assemble a show twice a week. And we're so grateful. That's value for value.
Yeah, and the volunteerism is a big part of it. That's not something you can just do if you're a commercial entity selling ads. It invites. I mean, our show invites volunteerism. We get reports that are voluntarily submitted. Yes. We get the art that's voluntarily done. We have somebody doing the art generator in voluntarily, mm-hmm. and it's all. That's what. It's a big deal when you can get a system together that has a lot of volunteerism.
Yeah,
because you end up getting astonishing product until it crops out.
It has its ups and downs.
There's some downside, but the downside is kind of fun. It's kind of quaint.
No, it's like, I like it because we can't yell at anybody.
You can't. What are you gonna do? I'm working for free. I'm brick.
if we had been paying for this, we'd be like, get that thing back up. I can't believe it. And so now we're like, I'm not spun up over it. I'm not mad.
You're fired.
I'm not mad. It's like, oh, I feel bad. I feel bad for Paul that he's trying to fix that. And it's a pain in the butt.
Well, I'm sure it's a miserable situation. No doubt. It wouldn't have taken him this long.
No doubt. So with that, that's the time and talent portion. We also have the treasure, the three T's of value for value: time, talent, treasure. And we love to thank our executive and associate executive producers right at the top of our list. We always read out the amounts. We give the notes that people have sent in. And we are very, and
we got to thank the artist for the last artwork.
Well, I don't know who it was because remember, you sent it to me and we said, I don't know who did it.
But the artist who did it should send us a note and say, hey,
so we can
give me some credit here.
So I can put your name into the credits, which are just empty because I didn't know who had done that because it was something you had just collected.
And I collect. Normally, before I do a newsletter, I go onto the art generator and I find two or three pieces of art that I might want to use for the newsletter. And then I'll place it into the newsletter and see if it works. And that piece was rejected. Or I used it. Don't remember. But whatever the case is, so I always have a bunch of pieces sitting in my files that I just looked at.
Your email, you mean? You email yourself?
No, it's actually I don't. No, I do it directly. Oh. I do just a save image as.
Oh, right click save image as. Nice.
Yeah, I don't do any email
slick
stuff.
Slick. All right, so. Yes, we like to thank our executive and associate executive producers. And we start off with a guy who has always been there for us, usually about once a month, Sir Onimus of Dogpatch and Lower Slobovia. And he sends, now this is not an atypical number for him because he likes $2 bills. He sent us a row of ducks, 2222, which I'm going to presume was in cash and included $2 bills, at least one.
One $2 bill, yes.
And he says, thank you. And he always has a typewritten note. We have very little idea about this producer, Sir Onimus of Dogpatch and Lower Slobovia, other than
he's anonymous. He keeps himself anonymous.
He's anonymous, and he is a patron saint for us. Thank you to all the producers, and congratulations to the many that now use the pronoun doctor. That's a pronoun we stand behind. And thank you to John and Adam for being effective altruists. Working on holidays, finding the best use of your remaining lives is to deconstruct news and entertain. Wait a minute. Is he predicting our doom here? Working on holidays and finding the best use of your remaining lives, that's you and I, John, is to deconstruct news and entertain the dedicated producers. It is good to see Americans fight the effort to impose theological beliefs into law by so-called conservatives. Having a little experience with countries committed to conservative theological laws of my faith, implementing some of these laws can cause even those with strong morals to question their interpretation. No, that's deep. It's deeper than normal, I think, for Sir Onimus.
Well, he's must have been given a parking ticket or something, I'm guessing, in Saudi Arabia, which comes with a beating.
John has often referenced shanty towns as an alternative to tent cities. And I would say you've promoted the idea.
Yes, I have.
The political term at the time was Hoovervilles. Yes, under President
Hoover. That was in the 30s, but worldwide is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the shanty towns that are everywhere but the United States, not the Hoovervilles. But go on.
He continues, but go on, Kara. With elections in the offing, perhaps they can be named Biden towns or Trump towns could work well, but the incumbent usually gets naming rights. No jingles, no karma. But thank you so much, John, Mr. Dogpatch and Lois Lobovia. You always have the best. You cut right through it, even if it's cutting through us. We love you for it. Thank you.
Yeah, Hoovervilles were, because they had this homeless situation back in the 30s, and it resulted in these little, it's nothing like today. No. As far as I can tell, I've looked into it. Mm. What we have going on today in certain cities, New York would be one of them, Chicago, San Francisco, although they're not there, I know what happened to them. And Berkeley had a big town of homeless. I don't know what happened to them.
Well, they
set up a
same
get
places.
Some acreage and let them do their own thing. Pluma's up. and she is Pluma. I think it's Kaihai in Hawaii. I asked the guy once, do you pronounce it Hawaii or Hawaii? And he says, you pronounce it Hawaii.
Hawaii.
I said, well, thanks. I said, well, thanks. And he said, you're welcome.
Oh, boy. Did that joke writer write that one for you? Jeez.
It's from my vaudeville days.
Yes, of course.
She came in with 1-1-1-1-1-1.
Nice. Satchel Richards.
She says, para manana, gents. Oopsie doopsie, Dame Pluma, protector of the feathered whales from here to Hawaii, with a correction and a make good for show 1612 and a few dollars for your troubles.
I'll say.
So she donated $1,000 and she wanted a make good, so she donated another $1,100 to do it.
Wow.
That's what I call a producer.
That's the producer.
Please note, Soul Sister Kelly Origo's birthday is December 4th, not January 4th.
Oh, no.
My mistake, so credit her with those 5111 bonus bucks and give her another birthday biscuit, if time allows.
I have a birthday biscuit for her.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
I also received my PhD, was somehow skipped over during the massive pronunciation ceremony, and I can't legitimately claim my damehood until I feel that sword touched down on my shoulder and upon my wee amygdala. P.S. Maui boots on the ground coming soon. Spoiler alert, no real solutions for the survivors on the table yet. Surprised? Mahalo nui loa for your courage and the supportive community you've co-created. Pluma.
Oh, thanks, well, thank Pluma. You, Pluma. Yeah, we got everything all set up for you. Vert Fuller is in Batavia, New York. Although with a name like Vert and a place like Batavia, you'd think it would be Deutschland. But no, New York. $1,000 with a handwritten note on Native American Rights Fund paper, which I thought was interesting, and says, John, I guess I don't exist. I know this is possibly late, but I will never get a chance again for a doctor near my name. So here is my check for $1,000. I will give this before Kathy Hochul takes everything from New Yorker and Joe B takes the rest. I need karma for my sister and who will be leaving soon. I will miss her. Apple pies. That's a cool Tourette's.
Just throw random name of pies in your notes.
It's a cool Tourette's. Apple pies. I'm sure I've given enough for knighthood and would like to be Sir Dirt. Karma to all. From Vert, Sir Dirt. Now, so does he? Are you going to send him a doctorate?
And he sends the details of the address and the rest.
Oh, okay. Well, and
he came in on time.
Yeah, okay. Well, here's the karma as he requested. You got it.
You've got karma.
I'm going to put apple pies for the round table just in case. Just add that for a second.
Maybe that's what he meant.
I like it, though. Apple pies!
Josh Brownlee in Decorah, Iowa. Could be Decorah, but I think Decorah, maybe. I don't know. 444.66 gets me to do 1,000. I guess I get a knighthood plus PhD. No, you get a knighthood. What I really want, however, is jobs karma for my wife who just got laid off last week. You can now call me Sir Protector of the Driftless Areas. Grandma's hummus for the round table, please.
You got
jobs,
it.
Jobs, jobs, and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You got karma.
And then we have Carl Post from Regalsville, Pennsylvania, 336. Merry Christmas. Happy birthday to my smoking hot wife, Donna Post. What are you drinking?
It's the same old signature seltzer. Original.
You know, you'd think you'd do something of a show and get something new to drink.
Yes, I will. And the next time you hear a can opening, it's going to be something wild.
Oh, I can't wait. Merry Christmas, happy birthday to my smoking hot wife, Donna Post. Here's an executive producer for your suffix to keep up with your DR, your doctor. And it says, oh, no, I'm sorry. There's a little, I'll reread that. So this is for Donna. Here's an executive producer for your suffix to keep up with the doctors and CPAs at work. Yes, well done. Good idea.
Horkins in Wiener Neustadt.
It's like New Wienerville. Really?
Yes, new hot dog. New hot dog, Austria.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they have a good, Austria's got great food.
Yeah.
I started listening to you after Adam's appearance on Peter McCormick's podcast, What Bitcoin Did. I'm hooked.
Yeah.
So what podcast was this I never heard of?
It's called What Bitcoin Did. It's very popular. Very popular podcast.
Good. Okay, yeah, well, Peter, get a more popular podcast.
Well, you could do some too, you know.
You're the pretty boy. The donation is also in celebration of my 61st trip around the sun, which finishes on the 2nd of December. Please add me to the birthday list. You're on it. Thanks for everything and keep up the exceptional work. Jingles, please. You like Boom Shakalaka, Little Girl Yay, and some Jobs Karma for my smoking hot girlfriend, Eva. Greetings from Wiener Neustadt, Austria. New Wienerstown, Ulrich. Ulrich.
Perkins.
Bingo, boom, boom, shakalaka, boom, 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 shakalaka, boom, boom.
Yay!
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for Jobs.
You've got karma.
Sean Boyce, Buford, Georgia, 333, one of our favorite numbers. ITM with the addition of our new human resource. I haven't had as much time to listen, but please deduce me with my 333 donation.
You've been deduced.
And thank you for all you guys do. Please share some jobs karma. We are all self-employed, so it's namely... So is it named differently? No, it's Jobs Karma. For our online shop, we've created the Atlanta Tennis Monsters characters and made really cool shirts by Mark Sundermeyer, a.k.a. Mark the Artist, who needs to be called out as a douchebag.
Douchebag.
I did hit him in the mouth last year. Special no agenda code for 20% off Mark's Atlanta Tennis Monsters t-shirts is no agenda 23. If anyone wants to help a brother out. Oh, can John do his sales voice for AtlantaTennisMonsters.com?
Yeah, I can. I had to put that up. Hold on. Okay. Sean Boyce spoke. Where is it? What am I supposed to? Oh, there it is. Hey, go to AtlantaTennisMonsters.com and get yourself some great t-shirts.
Wow. That the voice, yeah, that's the voice. I think that's the one. I was thinking of creating a shirt that says everything I learned about podcasting I learned from Adam Curry. Now just don't. Just don't. Please don't. Lastly, can we request podcast karma for our Atlanta tennis podcast? Is that a thing? If not, can it be? Well, of course it can. If I give it to you, absolutely. Thanks. And if you ever need a tennis expert, send me a note. Sean Boyce and my smoking hot wife and business partner, Giovanna Buford, Georgia.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for Jobs.
You've got karma.
Now we have a $333 donation from Switzerland from René Bernhardt's Greuter.
Which means St. Bernard's greeter.
Oh.
Well, maybe not, but it sounded funny.
Well, that sounds like it. Yeah. 333. And I'll give him a double up.
No. There you go.
You've got
double up.
Karma.
Takes us to our first associate executive producer, Millennial Fred, 250. See attached note. And let me see. Millennial Fred says, donation. Dear John and Adam and John, here are some options for your retirement plans. Work until you drop, preferred by most, if not all, shows your value. Or potential final episodes, 3,333 or 2,133 or 2,121 or 2,112. Adam, check your P.O. box. Sincerely, Millennial Fred. I will do that. That will do, Millennial Fred. Thank you.
Do you still have the old P.O. box, too?
No, I have my P.O. box 1849 in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Fred, what about the old one?
No, that's long gone.
Did you make sure it was forwarded?
Am I an idiot? Of course.
Well, that's a question that needs full show.
Go for it.
Okay. Ryan Diasio in Fishers, Indiana. Row of Ducks 222.22. Thank, and a great note. Best note. Thank you for your courage. See you in Indy.
Yeah. Steven Rivas. City of Industry, California, row of ducks, 222.22. Greetings. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't have these lined up, of course. Another Trump, I'm going to come because it's so funny. So funny. I'm going to have to start outlawing this one. Trump, come. All right, Trump, come. And then orange. Sorry, I didn't have these prepped for some reason. I got the orange. Where's the orange? Orange yell. It's like an orange. Orange. It's a big orange. Do I have the orange? Yes, I have orange yell. And goat karma from my bros, Mick Daub and G. Thank you. P.S. Bad MailChimp. Spank that monkey. Ha ha.
I'm going to come.
Orange!
You've got karma. There you
go. Sir Fodfather in Indianapolis, Indiana, 222.22. And he's also known as Ted Patnall. In the morning, thank you, saviors of sanity, for all you do. May you never find an exit strategy as proof that I do occasionally give a duck. I present the enclosed row of ducks, the value of which shall hoist me over the bar from baronet to the exalted title of baron. Should the peerage committee find no objection, the title Sir Fodfather shall be retired, and I shall henceforth be known as Sir Edward of Tatton Hall, Baron of Flyover Country. Jingle, little girl, yay. And he says, I just made it just in time for a visit from Adam and Tina to the Circle City. Woo-hoo. See you in December, Adam. And John, you are cordially invited as well. Come on down. Love is lit.
Yes, tomorrow, Tina the Keeper and I will be flying to Indianapolis for a meetup tomorrow evening, and we're very much looking forward to it. We spoke to Mark and Maria, who organize all of these meetups, and so apparently they have a stage there, and they had a great idea, which I agreed to. They want to do a Ask Adam, so everybody will be writing down their Ask Adam. Funny, you had the same reaction I had, except I was quiet about it. I went, oh, God, okay, yeah, great idea. So we'll do that, but I have a condition. The meetup report, which is always very professionally produced from the indie crowd, I want you, first thing that comes to your mind, I want you to, instead of your typical, I want you to tell me the thing you are most grateful for this year. That is what I want everybody to do for the meetup report. That is, so we need to shake these things up a little bit. See you. Yeah. Oh, please. Dame Beth is in Tucson, Arizona, 222. Hi, old boys. Here's my annual birthday gift to myself. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the yay. For her. Yay! Here's my annual birthday gift to myself, supporting the Beat podcast in the universe. I hope she meant best. Born on 12-2 at 2222, hence the dollar amount. Tucson slaves, watch for a meetup in the new year. No jingles, no karma. Dame Beth, Baroness of Baja, Arizona.
I don't have a name on line 15.
No, I don't have a name either, funny enough. The amount is typical or atypical.
So we're going to get a make good from whoever sent us $207.49. Let's give them a double up karma, whomever they are.
You've got karma.
Then we have Joe Deffen, New Baltimore, Michigan, 200. In the morning, John Adam, today, December 3rd, is my birthday. Happy birthday. And what better birthday present to myself than becoming a producer of the best podcast in the universe? This is also my first donation. Please deduce.
You've been deduced.
Was hitting the mouth. I was hit in the mouth by a buddy last year and have been faithfully listening since. Please also call this buddy out as a giant douchebag. He knows who he is. For jingles, can I get a biscuit for my birthday? Yes, of course you can. A little Reverend Al and a goat karma. Well, we can definitely give you a little Reverend Al. We love doing it. Goat karma as well.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T. You've got karma.
And I think you got on the birthday list as you're marked as such. Yes. DW in Lake Mary, Florida, $200. No note whatsoever. Give him a double up karma. or a she?
You've got karma.
All right. Then we have John Cooper, who is in China, Michigan. Is there really a place called China, Michigan?
Probably.
Wow, that's rough. I can't
China.
Go.
Where are you from? I'm from China. China. What? You don't look it.
It does kind of suck. I'm from China. I can't go to India as a peasant. So I tallied my donations to learn my 2053 makes me an instant baronet. Please pronounce me as Baronet John of the St. Clair Lowlands with rye whiskey and grilled beef at the round table. No jingles, no karma. Many thanks, John Cooper from China, Michigan.
And then last on our list, I believe it's last, is, Linda Lupatkin. Ha! She's in Lakewood, Colorado, and she wants jobs, Carmen. By the way, for a remarkable resume that gets results, go to ImageMakersInc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's ImageMakersInc.com. Or just find Linda Lupatkin under the show's producer list.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You've got karma.
Congratulations and salutations to these executive and associate executive producers. Why congratulations? Because not only have you supported the best podcast in the universe with your producership, these are titles that are real and usable anywhere. Credits of this nature are recognized, which is show business. So you can use it in your LinkedIn profile, use it on your resume. And of course, you can, if you don't have one, you can open up an IMDb account. They are universally recognized there. Almost 1,000 executive and associate executive producers in IMDb, including some real heavy hitters from Hollywood itself. And thank you all so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And we also want to thank everyone who came in under $50 for reasons of anonymity. We never mention any names under that amount, but we have a lot of people who just give us $5 from time to time when they can. We love you just the same. Thank you so much. The value is in the amount that is valued to you and what you can afford. So thank you for anyone who supports us in any amount. And John will take us through the 50s, and then we'll get into our meetups and a couple other things.
Sir M. Andrew Jones starts us off at $111.11. And he also actually did send in a nice card.
Isn't he the book guy? M. Andrew Jones. I remember him. He sends us books. We've read his books. I think we've read his books.
Well, he just also draws. He drew a little mountain on his card. It's very cute. He says thanks. Sir Ted in Mendon, New York, $111. Baron Latican in Houston, Texas, $100. John Robinet, $100. Kevin McLaughlin is up there already, Concord, North Carolina. Boobs. A-O-O-8, the ultimate pick-me-up, he writes. William Alston in El Paso, Texas, 8-0-0-8. He says, thanks for the infotainment. Sam Deaton in Signal Mountain, Tennessee, 72-58. Jose Paredes, Paredes, in Wichita, Kansas, 6-9-9-3. He's got a wife call out for his wife. A wife call out for her birthday. Wife call out.
Wife call out.
Shayla. Jim Barreth in North Wales, Pennsylvania, 6666. Paredes was 6933, if I didn't say. Kevin McLaughlin's back with 6006 with the comment, boobs are perfect. Boobs, are they perfect gift for, that's what it says. Boobs, are they perfect gift for any occasion? Except the grammarian's occasions. Peter Chong, and that was 6006. Peter Chong in Lakewood, Washington, 5510. Brian Furley, 5510. Jordan Hoino in Salem, Oregon, 50. Oops, these are all $50 donors. We're there already. It's a short list. Starting with Justin, as Justin Heiner. And he's just in time. Tony Lang, Castle Pines, Colorado. Dotted Mind, Lincoln, UK. James Sharametta in Napanock, New York. Kurt Patrick in Nanaimo, British Columbia. And for some reason, I'm starting to pronounce that wrong.
Is that the dog?
Charles, what?
Did I hear the dog?
I didn't play a dog.
No, I thought I heard the Basset Hound.
No, there's no dog here.
Oh, yeah. That dog don't hunt.
It was this guy.
I love my truck and I love what I do.
Mm-hmm. was him.
Kirkpatrick in Nanaimo. Let's go 50. Charles Peterson with a D in Albuquerque. Jacob Martinez in El Monte, California. Brett Farrell, who I believe is in New York City. And last on this short list, very short donation list today, as we expected after the promotion was over, Baroness Knight in Edmond, Washington. That's our group.
We have a couple of make goods and things that need correcting. Three in total. Sir Gary, who came in under 50 and did want us to read his note. Sir Gary of Casco Point on Lake Minnetonka here. Fantastic show this week. I'm writing and attaching a spreadsheet showing that he's exceeded the level needed as of December to become a baronet. If I may put in a shameless plug for a noble organization, I am state director for Bugles Across America at buglesacrossamerica.org. Our sole purpose is providing live taps free of charge for any U.S. veteran funeral honor services. Oh, how beautiful.
By the way, I got this note, and I said, wow, this is a very famous organization. And they did some local stories about them. Yes, that's exactly what they do. They bring out the bugler, and they give taps to the some of these funeral systems. And this guy is the head of it, I guess.
Wow.
And I'm astonished. This is an example of the kind of astonishing producers we have. I mean, this is like I was taken aback.
Well, I wouldn't mind a little No Agenda Bugle recording, honestly. Something we could play on the show.
Yeah, especially after a short donation segment, I think taps would be appropriate.
No, I don't want taps. I just want something like I want a charge thing or whatever. But anyway, our sole purpose is, and you're right, this is a very famous organization, providing live taps free of charge for any U.S. veterans' funeral honor services. The military authorized the use of a recording of taps for these events in the year 2000. Since then, our founder, Tom Day, and some 4,000 volunteers he has assembled take care of this last tribute to our veterans. Oh, I see. So the military went, we'll just do it. We'll just use a recording. And they said,
I got one here on my phone.
God bless you guys for doing that. If you could just give the website, ask people to remember when their veteran passes on that there's good chance that they'll have a recorded taps performance rather than having a heartbeat behind those sacred 26 notes. Just go to the website, put in the date and details, and someone will contact you and be there for your veteran. That's not too big of an ask. We love that you do that. Sir,
what's
Notch,
the website?
Well, I mentioned it three times. Buglesacrossamerica.com. Bugle.org. Buglesacrossamerica.org. Buglesacrossamerica.org. That's buglesacrossamerica.org. Sir Not Sure says, Dear John Adams, sir, donated for show 1611. I wanted to express the value I receive is priceless when every news source tries to cover up the truth. You guys kept me sane through the so-called pandemic at a time when fear was shoved down our throats. I would like to claim he did the 333333 donation. I would and he had no note.
The big one needed a note.
I would like to claim the title Baron Keeper of the Tri-Lakes if approved by the Peerage Committee. I would also like to call out Alex Rashaw as a douchebag.
Douchebag.
Thanks for bringing me to your show, though. Love is lit. Thank you, guys. From Mark Rashaw. And finally, Sir Julian says, I was originally knighted back in episode 1184, titled Ejexit, with a knight name that I found to be funny at the time, but is not family friendly. My last donation on November 20th put me well over the necessary level in donations, which I do believe makes me a baron. For my title change, I would like to be known as Sir Julian, Baron of the Santa Cruz Mountains, if this territory is available. John? Available?
Yeah, it's good, but what was his old name that he didn't like?
Well, it's apparently not good. But the note gets more interesting. This is truly the best podcast in the universe, and I don't know where I'd be without it, and I'm grateful that you two do what you do. You guys always say that couples that listen together stay together. Well, that idea is being tested right now, and because of me, I would really appreciate all the relationship karma I can get right now. Laugh. No. And he has a note.
I'm sorry,
he has
but it's like, wow, this is a bad thing.
He has a note. To the love of my life, babe, I love you from the bottom of my heart, and I don't know what I'd do without you. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me. Julian.
What did he do that he's forgiving?
Karma.
I would say he messed it up big time.
He did something.
He did something bad, big time.
Not getting vaxxed.
You're just making things worse. The guy's trying to, man. You know, trying to patch things up, man. Like, have a heart.
Sorry,
man. Have a heart. Have a heart. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the best podcast in the universe, especially our execs and our associate executive producers. Thank you for supporting us here for episode 1,103.
Our formula is this.
1,016.
We go out.
1,613.
We hit people in the mouth.
1,613. I'm out of control.
Water.
1613.
Shut up, Slade. Shut up, Slade. Yeah, we do have a couple of birthdays to celebrate. We have Ulrich Herkins, who turned 62 yesterday. Dame Beth also celebrated yesterday. Joe Duffin turns 27 today. Jose Paredes wishes his wife Shayla a happy birthday. She's celebrating today. Zach Taylor turns 54. Pluma, happy birthday to Keely Rigo for tomorrow. And on the 5th, my uncle Donald Gregg will be turning 96 years old. Happy birthday, Uncle Don. And Carl Post wishes his smoking hot wife Donna Post a very happy birthday. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
It's your birthday, yeah. Title changes. Turn faceless ladies. Title changes.
And you heard a couple of those title changes. Here they are listed in appropriate order. We have Sir Gary of Casco Point on Lake Minnetoka becomes a baronet. Sir Not Sure becomes Sir Not Sure Baron, keeper of the Tri-Lake. Sir Julian Baron of the Santa Cruz Mountains. And Sir Fodfather becomes a baronet. Sir Edward of Tatton Hall, Baron of Flyover Country. Thank you all very much for supporting us here at the No Agenda Show. It is highly appreciated. We do have a dame, which is, of course, there was the Pluma that we messed up, and we have a couple of knights, so let's get a nice one to rest on Pluma's shoulder there, John.
Here you go.
Ooh, that is a nice one. Come on up, Pluma. Sorry we messed it up. Wirt Fuller, John Brownlee, John Cooper, hop on over here if you don't mind, please. I'm very proud to pronounce the KB as Pluma, Dame of the Feathered Whales, Sir Dirt, Sir Protector of the Driftless Area, and Baronet John of the St. Clair Lowlands. For you, we have Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys, and Chardonnay. Along with that, apple pies, Grandma's hummus, rye whiskey, and grilled beef. And, of course, on deck, Redheads and Rye. We got Rumen S. Rumen and Rosé, Geisha and Sake, Bong Hits and Bourbon, Ginger Ale and Gerbils, Breast Milk and Pablum, Sparkling Cider and Escorts, and Mutton and Mead. Everybody loves the mutton and meat. And I would also like to welcome Wirt Fuller as a doctor. And he can also go to noagendarings.com, noagendarings.com, where you will see pictures of your beautiful knight or dame rings. Also, it comes with wax to seal your important correspondence with. In addition to that, a certificate of authenticity. All you have to do is make sure that you give us an address to send it to, and a ring size. All of that will be make it a lot easier to get that to you. Thank you so much for being here for us, the best podcast in the universe.
No Agenda Meetup.
Indeed, it's like a party. We had a meetup taking place in the Netherlands. No audible report, but this was Tilburg Café Kandinsky. And our producer there said, John Adam, the meetup in Tilburg went well. Baron Rob and Sir Detective Duderacci were joined by four first-timers who had traveled from afar. Roland, a recent associate executive producer, Amro, Katrina, and Ralph and Dog Turbo. We had great conversations, true quality time well spent. Thanks to all, and thank you for your courage. And we go over to the report from Denver.
Denver meetup, checking the shift handoff notes from the Netherlands meetup. We drank a lot of beer. A bunch of people were smoking weed, but they were trying to hide it from us. And Mirinukin. A lot of Mirinukin in the conversations. I guess we'll keep the meetup going on our global, round-the-world, No Agenda meetups. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah!
Great meetup. This is Sir R. I have Georgia on my mind.
Colorado Care Bear at the Denver meetup.
T-Dog, ITM.
Josh Assumption checking in from North Aurora.
This is M. Andrew Jones, still napping for humanity.
Oh, this is Corey in the morning.
Sir Soothsayer here. Thank you, John, for actually spelling my name, or saying my name correctly. Brian Furley, that's the way you say it.
In the morning! In the morning!
Meetups today. A meetup in Cheyenne is underway, I believe, at Chronicles Distillery in Cheyenne, Wyoming. On tomorrow, we have the December Indie No Agenda Meetup. That's right, the fly-in to fly-over country event at the Dugout Bar, and I will be there with my keeper, kicking off at 7 o'clock. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast. On Wednesday, the fourth monthly Webster County Wet Your Whistle Meetup, 5 o'clock at Community Tap and Pizza, Fort Dodge, Iowa. And the next show day, Thursday, Five Forks, first Thursday, 6 o'clock at Bullwinkle's Tavern in Simpsonville, South Carolina, and the North Wake Thanksgiving Recovery Circle of Trust at,
Tepid Water.
Compass Rose Brewery, Raleigh, North Carolina. And on the way, man, we got a lot of meetups all the way through Christmas and beyond, including December 22nd, Sofia, Bulgaria. Looking forward to a meetup report from that. We have Houston, Texas, Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn on the 9th. Very interesting. And February 3rd, Albany, California. The Get John Out of the House 2.0 meetup. You going?
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah, I guess so.
I'm excited. That'll be good. So finally, you'll get out of the house.
Again.
What? It happens twice a year. It's amazing how that works. Those are your No Agenda meetups. Make sure you go to at least one of these in your lifetime. And once you do, it's like Pringles. You got to eat them all. You can't stop because, just like we said earlier, our demo is the world. You will be thrilled to meet people that you might not have had a conversation with otherwise. It is the companion to the podcast. Go out, meet some of your producers. NoAgendaMeetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. And remember, connection is protection.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me. Triggered on hell to blame. You want to be everybody feels the same.
It's like a party.
It's always like a party. They truly are parties. It's a great party. I mean, it's just like a party that's on fire. Not like a collection of parties. Cop. Not like that. I only have one ISO. I feel bad. I'm falling down.
You should feel bad. What is it?
We're getting teabagged. There's no doubt about it.
What?
We're getting teabagged. There's no doubt about it.
We're getting teabagged?
Yes. We're getting teabagged. There's no doubt about it.
It's Tucker, for whatever reason.
I don't know what the hell that's about.
It's okay. It's not good.
It's no good. It's I have three that are all usable, mm-hmm. but let's see which one you like.
Okay. All right.
Requisite 1 second long.
Okay.
Start with the top. That means something.
And that means something.
Ooh, I like the up talk on that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do too. I like that one a lot. Devastated.
I was devastated.
No, I still like the first one better. Okay.
And then not right.
Something wasn't right.
I think
this all of them. That's interesting. I didn't notice that when I clipped them, but they all have an up talk and they're all.
Yeah.
Up.
Well, but this is.
And that means something.
I like that one the best.
Yeah, I think that works.
That really is good. Oh, hold
on
a second.
Now it's time for.
Ah, people love this segment. They listen to the end of the show.
Oh, I don't believe that for a minute.
Yes, people love the good news segment. It puts them in a good mood. They're happy, like, oh, now I can leave this program and just feel good about myself. Yes, yes, people are telling me I love the good news segment.
Nobody's done this, but okay.
It's true.
Good news. This is the good news clip for today. It's about the dog named Mudge.
Firefighters leaped into action, saving a 100-pound Great Dane trapped in a deep hole. This happened off of Old South Road and Lake Wheeler Road. Tonight, we talked to Mudge's owner about the rescue mission.
This is Mudge in happier times. And this was Mudge on Saturday afternoon. The 100-pound Great Dane fell into an old well 50 feet deep.
Oh, no.
We called 911 right away. And, you know, they come out, but they don't have they have to call the right department that has the right equipment. You know, they had to bring that tripod situation with all the climbing harnesses and everything to get down there.
Crews from Cary Fire, Fairview Rural Fire, and Swift Creek Fire Departments responded. They used a rope rescue technique. It took hours and plenty of patience, but crews were able to lift Mudge out.
I don't know, but unscathed. I just can't even believe it. It's quite the drop. And it is covered up now, by the way. It's completely covered up. So, yeah. You know, part of me kind of wonders. Yeah, part of me kind of wonders, you know, did she fall to save someone else?
So how did Mudge get down in that old well? Man. We found out Mudge's owners, the Houndeens, recently purchased the property, and the well sits quite a distance from the family home. They didn't think it would be a problem, but now they know differently. Mudge is now home safely, and her family couldn't be more thankful for first responders.
They did all of this for my dog. I mean, and she is part of our family, truly, so God bless them. I mean, they were very, very organized when they showed up. They had a plan. They knew exactly what to do.
I was so happy for Mudge. Now, that well was covered before with barbed wire. The family has covered it with some rebar so it doesn't happen to anyone else.
A good news story from JCD. Happy vibes for you and me. And we all feel better now he's done his bit. So back to reality, that's turning to shit.
Good news. Well done, John. There's nothing like a good news story that's about a dog.
Yeah, dog.
It's always good. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong at all. And we come to the end of our media deconstruction for this day. Thank you so much for supporting us, dragging us through. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something. Hope you got some value from it. We've got that Larry show coming up next on the tube, on the wires. It's episode 442, titled Merry Griftmas. Oh, that's going to be good. That Larry show. End of show mixes. Neil Jones, Steph Jacobson, and Jesse Coy Nelson, who never disappoints. Looking forward to meeting everybody in Indy tomorrow evening, coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where I remain, I'm John C. Dvorak.
And with that, we bid you adieu. We look forward to seeing you again on Thursday. I'll have my meetup report and all kinds of groovy stuff, no doubt, because the news never stops, nor does the deconstruction. Remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. Until Thursday, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
This was straight out of Putin's playbook.
Playbooks.
Well, we know this is definitely part of the Russian playbook.
Russian playbook.
And the Russian philosophy, the Russian playbook will not change.
So I think that is the Russian playbook.
It is part of the Russian playbook.
The tactics look familiar, like a page from Russia's playbook.
Because of what he called Russia's playbook on murdering people.
Clearly Russia benefits the most from this, and it does fit the Russian playbook.
Russia's playbook.
But what Putin is doing in Ukraine is actually straight out of the Russian military planner's playbook.
Putin's playbook.
When the Republican Party adopts Russia's authoritarian playbook.
So Ukraine is a country. Russia is a bigger country. Russia is a powerful country. Russia decided to invade militarily, unprovoked. Basically, that's wrong. We respect the sovereignty, the territorial integrity.
Right. We as America are saying that's wrong, and we will stand with Ukraine in saying that that is wrong. We know that what Russia is doing is wrong. They're
planning to be severe consequences. You'll hear on the news their bad behavior. You'll hear on the news their bad behavior. That's what the issue is, essentially. Their bad behavior. You'll hear on the news their bad behavior. That's what the issue is, essentially.
Right. I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
If you take out Saddam's regime, I guarantee you that it will have enormous positive reverberations on the region.
Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive.
If you take away the Soviet Union and its chief proxy, the PLO, international terrorism would collapse.
Other nations that you would recommend that the United States launch preemptive attacks upon at this point?
The answer is categorically yes, is Iraq and Iran. But a third nation, by the way, is Libya as well. Libya is trying very rapidly to build an atomic bomb capability.
All stand together to stop Iran's march of conquest, subjugation, and terror. No matter on which side of the aisle you sit, you stand with Israel.
The best podcast in the universe. Mofo. Dvorak.org/NA.
And that means something.